If that special someone is still waiting for you to say, I love you, maybe say, I love you with a gift from Amazon.com. Get the best deals on everything you need and help support Rob Has a Podcast when you start your shopping with our link, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, robhasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who's so useless outdoors, I need to have Stephen Fishback cut my coconuts, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. I am Rob Cesternino, and here we go again, episode number 3 of Survivor Cambodia. Very excited to be back in the studio this week for the big podcast, and we've got a great show for you guys here today. Very excited to talk with Denise Stapley. She's going to be joining us. Of course, she played with Abby Maria back in Survivor Philippines, so I'm sure she's going to have a lot to say. Then we're going to be talking with my good friend Antonio Mazzaro, who is one of the co-hosts with me on Post Show Recaps. We have a new show that we're talking about scripted TV shows. We're going to be doing a scripted TV recap called Most Shows Recapped. You could find that on postshowrecaps.com. We're going to be recording that live on Friday afternoons. And tomorrow we're going to be talking about this upcoming Friday, going to be talking about the upcoming season of The Walking Dead. If you want to join us live, that's of course on Post Show Recaps, our scripted TV podcast. Excited to talk to Antonio about your voicemails. This morning I spoke with PG, had a very nice interview with PG, and you can catch that on robhasawebsite.com. And of course, we had the Survivor Know-It-Alls as well this past Wednesday night, which if you didn't catch us live, you can always watch us live after the show at 9:15 p.m. Eastern time after the episode. So let's get started here today, because I'm so excited to have this guest with us back here on the podcast, because I have so many things that I want to talk to her about. One of my favorite people to talk Survivor about. Here she is. She's the winner of Survivor Philippines. Here she is back on the podcast, the great Denise Stapley.
Hey, good to be back.
Denise, my only pick that I ever got right.
Hopefully maybe you can do it again this season, right?
Well, I picked Sierra this season, so let's see what happened. Oh, I picked Kelly Wigglesworth over the summer, but then I changed it to Sierra.
So you never know. Maybe you could have gotten, you never know.
I got two shots. I got two shots at this season. Yeah. All right. So, Denise, we have so much to get into here today. How's everything going for you, Denise?
Things are going great. Life is busy. Work is steady, and loving the season so far. So not a single complaint on this end.
All right, Denise. So let's get into this, because I have a feeling you're sitting there watching this season and you are feeling like you are seeing deja vu all over again. With you're having flashbacks, I would imagine, to being back out in the Philippines.
It is, in weird ways. It's a little post-traumatic, you know, but luckily it's a lot more comfortable when you have a beer in your hand and maybe some pizza. So it's a lot more tolerable this time through. So, but no, it's a blast watching this and seeing what feels so familiar.
And I'm so excited to talk to you, because very recently I've had a chance to rewatch the Philippines over the course of the summer. Within the last like 2 or 3 months, I've been able to rewatch all of that and see all of that. And in rewatching it, sort of having an eye on Abby Maria, we know she's coming back and here's sort of what she does. And I have to say, I've even been a little bit surprised to have her at the center of this much controversy early on, because I think it does really sort of fly in the face about what she was saying sort of in the pregame about how she was going to be really changing things up from the first time around into the second time around. And really, we've seen that she's just been like sort of like at the center of this hurricane this whole time through 3 episodes.
Yeah, I think we were all probably hopeful that we might see a different version of Abby, but you know, at the core of it, every single one of those players that are out there, they are who they are. And, you know, all the changes and coming back, it really depends on how much time they've spent really focused on making those changes and really trying to shift things that were problematic in their first time through in the game. And I think Abby's intentions were absolutely, you know, strong. I mean, she had great intentions, and I think she really And probably maybe even watching thinks that she is playing a different game, but it's the same Abby.
Denise, I do want to get into all these specifics with you about Abby Maria, but the reason why I really wanted to talk to you so much about this season is I'm really fascinated with this idea about people. And when people feel like they can change, people feel like that they're okay, I'm going to come back into Survivor. This is my second chance. And this time I'm not going to blank. And for each of these 20 people that came back this season, they all had something that they said to themselves of, okay, I'm going to come back to Survivor this season. And this time I'm not going to, whatever their fill in the blank is. And with your background in psychology, I just really would love to know from you just sort of the mindset of people when they're going into something like this. Do you really believe that people have the capacity to go back and sort of make that self-evaluation and go back and actually be a different person a second time around than they were the first time around when they played this game?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, the whole core of what I do, you know, in therapy is if I didn't truly believe that was possible for people, you know, I wouldn't be doing the job that I do. But again, you see players that go out, and in the mix of people that we have out there, I think there are some players that have truly spent more time actively working on that. So I do. I think people can, and I think we're seeing it. You know, as we talk tonight, you know, we're seeing change that is really, truly change that I think can stick through the course of the game and outside of the game. But no, I think definitely people can. But, you know, personality change is really hard. And, you know, we fall into, you know, it's like ruts in a road. And, you know, it rains and the ruts, you know, you get the tracks built in there, and it's really easy in certain situations and when triggers are there to fall back into those old personality traits. And, you know, clearly, you know, as we talk about Abby, we're going to see that's a part of, I think, what's happening for her and for others. You know, they're really conscious of those ruts and they're, you know, they're focused on it, you know, every day in the game and making those changes.
It's so difficult for us to try to change these things in our everyday lives, and we're not under these traumatic conditions that Survivor brings out. Is it one thing to sort of say, okay, I'm going to be different, but then at the point when you get out there on Survivor in those traumatic conditions, is it that much harder to do under the extreme circumstances?
Absolutely. I mean, you think any change that you're working on outside of the game in your everyday life, you know, you can try and practice that. And, you know, you could say, you know, if you're somebody who's more introverted, you can practice, you know, getting kind of outside of your shell and talking to people or, you know, trying to respond to conflict differently. But Survivor is a different beast. And you go out there and, you know, you have not only the changes you've been trying to make, but it's so much harder because of the elements and the paranoia that sets in and the pressure. And, you know, and there really is, there's a huge pressure for every one of those players out there right now to change that game. And so you add that in, and yeah, I think that can kind of short circuit a lot of the good intentions.
And then for the people who played the game further, you know, since the last time they played versus the people that played it more recently, do you think it was harder or easier for people to change things about themselves when they played the game closer to when they're playing it now? And was it easier for people who played it further away, or that doesn't really make a difference?
You know, I don't know. I think it's mixed because I'm seeing some players that, you know, kind of old school players. You can look at Terry who played the game. You know, it's been quite a few years. Or, you know, even Kelly coming back in and seeing, you know, how they may be approaching the game, you know, differently. But then you have Spencer who's more recent and he's playing a totally different game. So I think it's a mix. I don't necessarily think it's a matter of, you know, older players in terms of their season versus newer players. I think part of it's a maturity. I think part of it's, again, it's how invested are they in really wanting to change that, and how much do they want to change that game? I mean, I know they all want to win, but to really make those changes, you've got to be invested in and working on it consistently.
Okay, well, let's start to turn towards Abby Maria. And I would just love to hear from you if there's anything that you're seeing differently about this Abby Maria than the Abby Maria you played with in the Philippines.
I've heard, you know, you and Josh talk and, you know, in the know-it-alls, and I have to agree with, you know, you had talked about, I think it was after episode one, and I completely agreed with, you know, we're seeing the same Abby. Abby is Abby, you know, just like everybody else out there, Abby is Abby. But I do see her on some level really trying to fight, like to give herself a little bit of a filter. And I'm saying a very little filter, but you know, you could watch her at tribal council, at least, you know, the first time through. And it looked like she was like at least attempting to try and bite her tongue, to try and maybe choose her words differently. But I think that filter is quickly going to break, and we're seeing it. I mean, but it only lasts for so long. She can only kind of stay in that place for so long. So I think at the core of it, we're going to see a very similar Abby, because again, you know, just like everybody else, she's triggered by the same things that she was triggered by in the season that she was out there before.
Now, I've gotten to know Abby a little bit in the real world, and I've always found her to be a lot of fun in real life. And I don't know how much time you spent with her outside of the game. Do you think that the game brings something out in her? Like, I played with Alicia Calloway in the Survivor All-Stars, and she was the nicest person every time I saw her outside of the game. But those 12 days that I was there with her, she was just really mean and very difficult to be around. I guess I don't know if it was her metabolism or what, but she was really unpleasant to be around in the game. But I found her to be fantastic outside of the game. Do you think, is there a little bit of that with Abby Maria, or have you found her to also have these sort of issues off the island?
You know, I have probably not. You know, I really can only speak to my interactions with her in the game. You know, I've had, you know, a few brief Facebook interactions with her behind the scenes, and, you know, she's popped onto my page a little bit, and she's very pleasant. Like you said, she's incredibly pleasant. And, you know, I think she's incredibly driven in her life, and, you know, she's got, like, she would probably describe that Brazilian fire. And so in those small doses, for me, she's been very pleasant, you know. So longer term, I don't know if that would hold up. You know, I think it's, again, I think you're right. To some extent, the game brings out those traits. Those traits are there. So it's not that the game creates those traits in her. Those traits are Abby traits. Those are part of her personality. Those are part of who she is, a part of how she handles, you know, different relationships. But the game most definitely intensifies that, not just for her, but for anyone. You know, I saw myself, you know, we can go back and, you know, we can look at ourselves in the game and go, wow, you know, that's not typically how I am, you know, on a day-to-day basis, but boy, that really brought that out. That is a part of who I am, and it brought out that part of me. But so yeah, in the real world, I think she's probably fairly pleasant, but I really haven't had that opportunity to have those interactions.
You know, there's been such an interesting pattern with her through three episodes, and we saw in the first vote, you know, she was sort of on the fence as to which side she was going to go with. And ultimately, you know, it seemed like Shireen took her under her wing, and they had that alliance with the quote unquote beach people, with her and Spencer and the new school people. And they felt like they had Abby as one of their solid numbers. But after that altercation that we saw in last week's episode, then she flipped, and it was going with Terry and Jeff, and isn't Terry such a nice man? And then she was all with them, and sorry, Shireen, and you know, your group, you guys are old news, that you guys have to pay. But then this week it was like another flip around against those same people from Takeo. And it's been this very interesting pattern of the people that take her under their wing. They have been, through three episodes, the next people that she turns on. Have you noticed this pattern, and can you speak to this at all?
Absolutely. No, you can see it so clearly. It's, you know, who's kind of vetting her, you know. It's like, you know, like vetting a, you know, somebody that you want. I mean, that's what they're doing. And she's really, and that's again, a part of who Abby is. I think she's really susceptible to that in the game. You know, if you compare back to her first season, you know, she had Pete was consistently, you know, he could manage her, and, you know, he did a good job of staying really consistent and doing that with her. But, you know, we're seeing it change, like you said, each time. And it makes her a really, you know, it makes her so unpredictable that, you know, as an alliance, you know, pulling her into an alliance is just really dangerous.
You know, that's a really great point that you make about Pete, because all through Survivor Philippines in the pre-merge game, that tribe, that Tandang group, they never went to a tribal council up until the point that they went to the merge and they wanted to vote out RC. But she was sort of in lockstep, not just with Pete, but with artists, that they had basically this three-person alliance there. This time around, she doesn't have a sounding board in Pete or artists to say, hey, you know, let's not tell off Lisa, or let's not do anything, you know, that's going to be, she doesn't have anybody who is sort of course correcting with her. And I think that she's sort of out there on her own, which is probably a very scary proposition for her.
Mm-hmm. And I think it probably makes her feel really insecure in the game. You know, it because, you know, when she had Pete and Artis, it's that security and not having to, you know, being on Tandang and not having to go to tribal council, there was the security in that. So in each of these, when she's facing immediate, you know, insecurity of what's going to happen, and now with the tribe split, you know, it just triggers that for her. So I think that's a part of what we're seeing, you know, and Terry did a great job of reassuring her, and, you know, her hearing those words, I've got your back. You know, Tasha did an amazing job, you know, this week of, again, doing that vetting and trying to, at least for that moment, you know, provide that security. But it just doesn't take much to uproot that for her. And so she really, you know, I don't know what's going to happen here forward. I've got some guesses in my head, but, you know, it really has to be someone who can continuously reassure her and not waver at all.
The thing that I'm really interested to see, and you're right, that Tasha did do such a great job of taking her under her wing, but we would have said the same thing about Jeff and Terry last week of, oh my God, didn't they do such a great job, that Jeff Varner was talking about, I love Abby Maria, this is delicious, I love keeping her around. And then all of a sudden, then she was ready to turn on him because she felt like she's at the bottom. I was reminded of the parable, the Aesop's fable of the scorpion and the frog, Denise, of the scorpion that needed to get across the river and got on the back of the frog. And the frog said, how do I know you're not going to kill me? And the scorpion's like, why would I do that? I would never do something like that. And halfway across the river, the scorpion stings the frog. And right before he's about to die, he says, why did you do this? Like, I can't help it. It's my nature. And I just wonder if this is what's going to happen to Tasha and Andrew in being allies with Abby Maria.
I do. I see it. And I don't know if you would agree with this or not, but I was actually on a run today, and I had listened to, you know, the know-it-alls, and there's something, and it was something from Tasha's first season, but it's something this season that has kind of resonated or triggered for me. She reminds me of RC, not in personality, but in the way that she's in her approach to strategy. And this time through in the game, Tasha's pushing hard. You know, she wants to strategize, and that's kind of how RC was with Abby. And, you know, clearly there were other things that led to the falling out with that. But my concern is, you know, at some point, you know, that something about that, you know, Abby, I know in her pregame stuff, had already kind of, there were people that were reminding her of our season. And again, she's susceptible to that. And what I wonder is that strength of Tasha, or that her approach of being so strategic, and even though it's right now, it's vetting her and bringing her in, if that's going to kind of come back around and become or feel like a threat for Abby, and all of a sudden Tasha is going to be on the outs. I think it'll definitely be Tasha on the outs before Savage, because I think we've seen that when Abby kind of blows up or has these explosions, it seems to be first, you know, yes, Scoopin was a moron, you know, or an idiot and a moron, but she seems to go after the females first. And it's like she eats the women first. And the men can typically come in, like, again, Savage could really kind of do the same thing like Terry did. Varner can easily, even though he's maybe kind of shifted things around or made her uneasy, I think Varner can easily reassure Abby and be okay. But PG never had a chance. There was no way PG was ever going to repair anything with Abby. And I think Tasha is at risk for potentially being the next one that Abby could target for any sign of shifting, disloyalty, anything like that. I don't know if that makes sense for you, but something I was thinking today.
Yeah, it definitely does. And again, you know, Pete was somebody who was also agitating that RC and Abby relationship in the Philippines. And there's no Pete here, but they don't need Pete to create these problems. I mean, this was Abby Maria this season.
With me, your dad.
That's what she says. But I went back and I pulled the clip from Here's Abby Maria with RC back in the Philippines.
I am your friend.
Me too.
But if you with me, you're dead.
Yeah. That's
what happens.
If you F with me, you're dead.
Well, and I can tell you, when we had merged, I don't even know if I've ever talked with anyone about this, but when we had merged in the Philippines, it was a conversation, you know, on one of the footpaths, and it was one of the very first conversations that I ever had with Abby. And she comes at you so aggressively. And it's that either you're with me or you're against me and you're dead. And that was basically the proposal was, you know, it was kind of like she was proposing to, we saw with Wu and PG, like, so what are you guys going to do? It really wasn't a question. It was kind of like the couple in couples counseling where it's like, yeah, you can go ahead and go to that football game if you want, but I'm going to be pissed off. So mm-hmm. She already knew what her answer was. She already knew what she needed them to do and wanted them to do, and anything veering off of that and you're out. So, I mean, she just comes at it so aggressively.
I pulled a clip also this morning. I was watching PG talk about her experience. They do this video with the survivors the day after. Mm-hmm. I want to play this clip for you of PG and then get your take on this. This is PG talking about her experience with Abby Maria.
My worst memories are any interaction involving Abby Maria. This is hands down, like, the worst human being I've ever met in my entire life. I hope to God that this is like a survivor persona. Something tells me it's not. And I don't know, like, I feel like all the qualities that make me really good at life are what made me bad at Survivor. And I feel like all the qualities that make Abby Maria really, really bad at life are what makes her good at Survivor. Like, this woman is super paranoid. You know, she's got like a low self-esteem, I think, which is what makes her constantly think people are talking about her. But that makes her get up in everyone else's business. And because she's in everyone else's business, she kind of knows what's going on, you know, and that's important in Survivors. This woman got no problem like lying to people, deceiving people. She has no loyalty, but she thinks she does. So she's able to tell people that she does with a straight face, even though she's jumped ship on every single vote constantly. And it's just such an irritating person to have to be around. And the worst part is that because of that, everybody wants to keep her around. Like, everybody thinks that she's a good, like, she's an easy vote leader, or she's like a good shield, which is, you know, I get it. But all that aside, like, I don't have to deal with her anymore. So, you know, there's, at least I got that going.
So PG is relieved to be out of the game.
It sounds so horrible, and I'm not, and I definitely don't think that Abby is the most horrible person in the world. There are many other people that are truly horrible, but this is a part of who Abby is. And again, this game just, I don't know what it is, Rob, but the game just brings it out in her, you know, maybe. And again, those short doses, I think that Abby, you know, I think I would probably enjoy having a beer with Abby, and then we would both go home and it would have been a pleasant night and that would be great. And but when you're on that island and you can't get away from each other, you know, it's really hard. You know, I deal with, you know, some, you know, on occasion I've dealt with, you know, some pretty difficult clients. And the thing that keeps me able to function with them is they leave after an hour. You know, I mean, that's truly it. And I don't mean it like disrespectfully. It's they go away. I'm not with them 24/7. And so I feel, you know, PG definitely experienced, you know, the that personality with Abby that, you know, I'm sure that RC probably experienced some, and I did, and actually a lot of us, you know, but, you know, underneath it, you know, I think she's definitely got some great qualities. This game just doesn't always bring them out, but PG's right. Some of those qualities make her a great player for the game.
So I want to bring this back to you, okay? Because PG brings up this idea of that the things that make Abby Maria, you know, that she's paranoid and that she is somebody who flies off the handle, all of these things that probably are negative qualities to have in real life make her somewhat of an effective survivor player, or at least somebody that people don't want to get rid of in mm-hmm. the game. Now, you famously said that you did not want to be somebody to bring Abby Maria to the end of this game. You described her as, I don't want to bring the person to the poker game who doesn't know how to play poker just so I could take their money. But we've seen so many people this season, Jeff Varner included, who said, I love the idea of taking Abby. I want to take Abby to the end. This is a great idea. But people are getting burned by doing that. So, Denise, was there a method, and something that I was very critical of you at the time, did you have the right idea? Is it the right move to make sure, yes, Abby Maria is a goat, but we need to get her out of here because she's going to ultimately create more problems. She's not a goat that can ever be controlled.
I don't know if I had the right idea. Like, if you're asking me, I think it worked. I mean, the only thing I can honestly say is I was lucky that it worked for the season that I was in. You know, because that is what we see. You know, people do want, they want that goat with, they want that player that they know they can beat. And, you know, for myself, that's a flaw in my game, you know, and I know that would probably be a flaw in my game if I ever went back out there, because my brain just can't wrap my head around spending, not just, and it's not just about winning the game. It's about spending 39 days on an island with someone that you just can't stand. You know, it's just, and that's a definite flaw in my own personal game, that I got lucky that, again, it played out. And luckily enough, people were driven crazy enough by her that they were willing, you know, to push through with that. But yeah, I mean, you can get burned by it, but it clearly can work. I mean, I could see Varner, clearly he loves her and, but he's got a long road to hold her hand, to get her to the end. If that's what he wants to do. I mean, we're only on, I think, what, this was day 9?
I think it might be day 8, yeah.
Yeah, day 8. So, I mean, there's a long road ahead, and, you know, there's a whole lot of management that he has to do to be able to get her to the end and get himself to the end. So, I don't know if I answered that for you, but...
It's really tough to manage somebody like that. And I think that people think it's going to be easier than it ultimately is, that they see, okay, well, Boston Rob had his fill up. And, you know, that I don't know if you want to give credit to Philip that he was only seeming unmanageable and that he actually was somebody who was just a loyal soldier, or you want to give credit to Boston Rob for keeping Philip in line. But I don't know if there's a survivor out there that is able to, you know, get Abby Maria to stick with the plan and stay on board. Like, she is just such an unstable element, and I don't think anybody can predict what she's going to do next. And I think that anybody who attempts to try to say, okay, Abby, you're with me now, I think is probably going to get burned in this game.
I think, well, it's huge likelihood, just the volatility. You know, it's one thing to take someone that you think is a goat in the way that they're just, you know, they're, the game is coming to them, they're not coming to the game, you know, that they're just waiting for things to happen. They're not good in challenges. You know, they're, like you said, kind of this more passive, you know, like Philip, but Philip at least had a personality that I think could be entertaining and tolerable in some of those doses. And so it makes it, again, like you said, easier to bring him to the game, but that volatility that she has, absolutely. That's a risk that, you know, definitely I wasn't willing to take. And I'm shocked that everyone just, They want to take her. They want to, you know, and right now she's a number. You know, that's part of it is, you know, for Tasha and Andrew Savage, you know, she's a number right now. I mean, that they needed that. And so it's kind of a little bit of necessity. You know, I don't know that Tasha and Savage had a lot of other options. So they needed to be able to pull her in. But long term, definitely high risk.
Just one last thing. I'm sure we'll talk a bunch more about Abby as we go along here. Josh, also, he does his exit interviews for Parade.com, Josh Wiggler. And he had an interesting nugget from his interview with PG today. So he, in his interview with PG, he was talking about how he says that she had said that, I almost understand why RC chose not to do this season, knowing that Abby Maria was going to be on. Seriously, I actually understand. And I feel if I had to play with her again, I might say no. Also, that's literally how bad she is out there.
I can relate to that. I can tell you last night I got a text from Michael Scoopin quoting me from our season. And, you know, if I pull it up, it said, I would rather lose $1 million than spend one more day on the island with that woman. So if that tells you anything, it depends on, and a lot of people don't have that intense of a reaction with her, but it just, you know, PG, I think my personality might have some similarities with PG to some extent, and it just drives you crazy. So yeah, so I can understand where PG's coming from. The fact that I was at one point in the game willing to give up the chance at $1 million to avoid having to spend one more day on the island with her. That's pretty bad.
All right, Denise, there's so many different parts of your Survivor game, I think, that are relevant to what's going on here in the season. But let's talk about this idea of these people that went to a tribe swap. And you were part of sort of a unique situation where you and Malcolm were the only people left on Matt Singh. And then ultimately, your tribe just got absorbed into the other two tribes. And you went over with Penner and Kent and Carter and everybody over there at Calibur. And so you went over there. And so you were a person who had to sort of figure out what to do. You were sort of in the Tasha and Andrew Savage situation of, what do I do in this tribe? Because I am down in the numbers. And actually, all of these tribes have some sort of a 4-2 configuration. So there's no even 3-3 split in these three tribes. Exactly. Can you talk a little bit about what that's like to come into a tribe where you are not in the numerical advantage anymore?
You know, it sucks. But I think, you know, it's like Tasha, you come in, and at least for myself, as much as you're worried about not having that number, it's like you have to slow down. Or at least for myself, you know, being able to kind of just slow down and take some time to kind of figure out what's going on. You know, in Calibur, you know, there was a clear male female split at, you know, at the time that Dana was still there. And so it was really, you know, I was probably in a little bit of an easier position than, you know, Tasha and Savage, because I kind of had this opportunity to choose, you know, do I go with the woman, which I honestly never considered, or do I try and kind of make my way in with the men? And so it was a little bit easier for me, I think, in that respect. But you kind of have to be patient. You know, you're looking for, you know, where alliances aren't quite as strong as people like to say that they are. And that's exactly what Tasha did. And they came to them. You know, I mean, that's the great thing is, you know, she was listening and kind of making some proposals out there, but then ultimately, you know, to have PG and Wu essentially offer up the opportunity, it was like Christmas morning.
That was really, really impressive. Going back to Matt Singh for a minute, you know, you played in a season that also had these returning players in their second chance and Penner on his third chance. But you were there with Russell Swan, and he was somebody who came into that game and he really did want to change what went wrong in his first game, which I would argue that what went wrong in his first game was that, you know, he worked himself too hard. But he seemed to really feel like, I need to not be the leader this time around, which seemed like counterintuitive to his nature. And it seemed like he was really taking steps to try and not be the leader, but he also couldn't fight being the leader. Just could you talk about what you were able to observe as watching somebody try to go through a second chance and sort of trying to correct things on the fly?
You know, it's that same thing, you know, watching him go through that and, you know, with Matt Singh, it just goes back to that, you know, we are who we are. And he went out there and again, the intentions were good, but then all of a sudden when you're faced with, okay, we've got, you know, he worked, it triggers those old personality traits. And I think it's kind of like with Abby, like, I don't think she can help herself at this point. She can't help herself. You know, Russell though had the ability to kind of, you know, after the challenge, you know, and after we'd kind of talk to him and say, hey, here's, you know, he could kind of readjust, but there's, you know, there's a piece when you're thinking about trying to change behaviors and personalities, you have to have the insight that you're actually doing it or the awareness. And I remember sitting down and having a conversation with Russell and, you know, we were talking about kind of how he had blown up at one of the challenges, and there just wasn't, there's that missing piece of that awareness of how the behaviors affect other people around you. And that's kind of the same thing with Abby, but I think it's just hard as a leader. I think he just couldn't avoid falling back into that role, you know, in his real life, that may be, you know, at work, does he play a strong role, you know, like that? He just couldn't help it.
You know, we've also seen now Spencer is talking about trying to play a radically different game at this point in time, where he's not just going to be the person who's going to talk about alliances. He's going to be the person that makes those emotional connections. Do you think could he do that big of a change on the fly in his game in the middle of a game?
See, I don't think he's doing it on the fly, though. I think that's the thing. I think Spencer has actually truly taken some time. And I have no idea, but I think he is, in whoever he is or in how he's been looking at his life or going back into this, he's really taken some time to think about, what do people need from me? What do those alliances need from me? How am I going to, you know, play that? And he's doing it. I mean, he is, you know, I've been surprised by both he and Cass, I think, are shocking. You know, Cass is shocking me, and Spencer is doing a great job of trying to build relationships and, you know, seeing him talk with Jeremy and, you know, yeah, it's, I think he's doing it. He's, whether or not on the fly as he goes, I mean, he knows this is his opportunity, and he knows he's keeping it very conscious, very much in the forefront of his mind of what he needs to do on a daily basis. It can't be all about strategy, strategy, strategy. He's got to build those relationships.
Because I think one of the things that was the most effective about your game was, I don't think that you were the person that was talking numbers with people. That you were the person who was making the emotional connection much more than the logical, strategic connection with people. We saw that there's that one scene where you're with Russell Swan, and, you know, he's talking about this whole experience of being bullied. And then, you know, you were able to start to connect with him about that. And then that also led with, you know, him voting with you on that vote where ultimately he was going to go home because you didn't want, I forget what the exact circumstances were. Forgive me for that. But then also with Mike Scoopin at the final four as well, where you were able to connect with him and get him and Lisa to vote with you and not with Malcolm. So do you think that Spencer is on the right track here?
Absolutely. You know, and whether or not it'll work long term in the game and kind of take some of that pressure off of him of being seen as kind of the strategic threat, I don't know. But I think it's him trying to bring out a different trait in him. It would be like me going back and trying to play, you know, kind of a little bit more of an aggressive strategic game. But really at the core of who I am, I would much rather be building those relationships. And that's what makes me comfortable in those alliances. And that's what makes me loyal in those alliances. And so I definitely think he's on the right track, especially being in, you know, with the new tribe switch. He's got to do that. You know, it's, you know, to keep him, he's got this opportunity. You know, he's got Steven there. He's got Jeremy that he's connecting with. You know, I mean, he's in a great position right now.
You mentioned Cass, and I want to go back to talk about what you're seeing with Cass, mm-hmm. because you, from the first time around, that you had some choice words for Cass after her first game from May 22nd, 2014. That I see that you said, you posted on Facebook, you said, just finished watching Cass's Welcome to Ponderosa, which was about as cold as our last Iowa winter. Yikes. Talk about awkward. And you did not like how she had said that she tried to play like a man, and you felt like that you don't want to play like men.
Oh, see, this is where, you get me in trouble, Rob. This is how I don't make many friends when I do your podcast. So, but no, that's absolutely correct. And it wasn't. And
I'm sorry that I'm summarizing this because I'm probably not doing justice to your words.
There's just so much more to that. If anybody wants to go back and
you said, and no, I don't want my daughter to think she has to play like men. For me, that statement sent the subtle or not so subtle message that being a woman or playing like a woman has less value. And that, my dear friends, is a load of crap.
Yeah. Cass may not have been too happy with me after she read that one or heard about it. I don't know that she ever read it. But yeah, you know, it's because Cass and I play a totally different game. You know, as people, you know, just as two women, as two moms, as two women, we are totally different people. And, you know, and that, you know, that was reflected in how she played her game. And that's how it was reflected in how I played my game. And so, you know, being able to go in, you know, I think I was struck by the comment at that time was just, you know, I do think there's value in going into the game of Survivor and being able to just be who we are and not having to have it be, you know, this male game or this female game, or having, you know, a female game of building relationships, or having to play kind of the cards that you're dealt, which for me, I kind of had to play a quieter game. Because had I played, you know, kind of a more balls to the wall approach, I probably would have gotten myself voted off. But there was a, yeah, with that. But in terms of just with Cass this season, I am seeing her adapt, you know, and I'm seeing her do more of, you know, kind of what Spencer has done, which is to be able to, you know, to take maybe some of that feedback. You know, I don't know if, you know, if something sunk in, you know, I just know she's kind of joked about reading the book, you know, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And, and what I'm seeing, though, is whether or not it's the tribe makeup, something in that Cass has taken to heart, at least for the game. You know, whether or not this is something that she's motivated to do, you know, outside in her day-to-day life for the game, she's figured out this is a part of it that I need to work on. I have to work on that social game, which might be in her mind maybe a more female game or building those relationships, or, you know, I'm not sure how exactly she would look at that. But I'm seeing her adapt, and, you know, I'm seeing her, you know, talk with more people and ask questions and be interested in people. And, you know, I think that's helpful for her. I mean, she's not, you know, she's not Chaos Cass right now, which I think is really good for her, whether or not she really loves that title, which I think she does. That's not going to help her win the game at the end. It might get her to the end, but I would be afraid that that would not help her actually win the game if she goes back to that.
And I agree with everything that you're saying. I think that Cass, when she is feeling vulnerable, I think she does resort back to this Chaos Cass, and she is going to. She talked about trial by ambush back in her first season, and a very aggressive posture. But here she is talking about things like she's on the Love Tribe, and she really, if you, I don't know if you watch any of these secret scenes, she is smitten with Joe.
I did. I watched that one today. It's like, what was it? The Cabana Boy one?
Yeah, Cabana Boy Joe. And she's really very taken with Joe. There was a secret scene last week also where she talked about how close her and Joe have become. And she talks about how, like, that is a really good ally for her. And it's a very interesting relationship. And so what I want to know from you is that do you see some sort of, you know, crazy Malcolm and Denise type upside for Cass and Joe?
Yeah. Yes, I could, because I think Joe, you know, I think Joe is a good fit for Cass right now. I think Joe, just his personality, you know, he's not Joe, everything, you know, again, I've never talked with Joe, I've never met Joe, but everything you see from the show or even in secret scenes, seems kind of like this, you know, he's just this gentle, you know, gentle Joe, you know, like, hey, everything, life's good. You know, he's positive. I think he's really good at bringing people in. And so he can keep her really comfortable. And that's a good pairing for her, because then that keeps the chaos away, you know, and, you know, helps her kind of to continue to adapt with that. So yeah, I mean, definitely a different relationship than Malcolm and I. I'm pretty sure Malcolm would describe me as the gross old lady. So probably a little
different. That's not very nice.
No, we say it very lovingly. Like, no, that's a very endearing. Like, that's quite honestly, that's when we text each other, that's often what I'm called, or I'll call myself. Because how many years older am I? I mean, it's just one of those funny dynamics, though, being out there when you connect with somebody, or you're in an alliance with someone who's, so, you know, they're not young enough to be your son, most definitely. Mm-hmm. They're not old enough to be your brother. And so it's kind of this strange, like, dynamic. But no, I think it's a great fit for Cass, you know, with Joe, if he can kind of keep that going.
And so Kim doesn't get jealous that you text with Malcolm, like when my wife found that I had done FaceTime with you a couple months ago.
No, actually, he finally connected So and I on there, because we were talking about a Tough Mudder. So no, I'm pretty sure that So doesn't have anything to worry about nor do I think she feels any ounce of insecurity about that.
Yeah, just if
so, no worries.
If people are new listeners, they don't know that story from a couple of months ago when Denise's Twitter handle is a goofy gal, and then I had needed to FaceTime her to do the podcast. Then Nicole had seen my iPad with a missed call from Goofy Gal and was like, "Who is Goofy Gal? Why is she calling your phone?" But I said, "Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it." And then she got very upset.
Didn't mean to get you in trouble. Most definitely.
Fine. I like to keep her on edge a little bit, just like
that's
make
good,
sure.
You know? Yes. Little jealousies, little small pockets of jealousy are good in a marriage.
Yes, I like so that.
Keep the fire burning.
Okay. In terms of Cass and Joe, though, so if we're talking about Joe as a Malcolm, I feel like the conventional wisdom is that Joe's upside in the game, it seems to be around the time he went out last season, because people are going to know at what point, you know, you got to get rid of Joe from the game. But Malcolm's a guy who made it to fourth place in the Philippines. What could Joe take away from Malcolm's game to have him get further than he got the last time?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure, because everything we're seeing so far is everybody's talking about how great Joe is. But, you know, we're hearing, I think it was Kelly in one of the confessionals, might have even been Cash. You know, it's like, keep him around for now, but no way we're taking him to the end. So yeah, I'm not sure, you know, other than he's got to win immunities to be able to get to the end. And he's got to take some of that heat or somehow. I'm not even sure. I'm honestly not sure what he can say to anyone right now, other than letting someone else kind of take the reins strategy wise, which actually with Cass, I think Cass might drive strategy more than Joe. And so Cass might be willing to take Joe because she might be able to make a better case, you know, in terms of decisions that might get made down the line with alliances or, you know, votes. But I'm honestly not sure, Rob.
So this idea of a partnership, and who knows ultimately if Cass and Joe will amount to anything, but I think that what you and Malcolm were able to do so effectively, and I think it's so important in Survivor, is just to have a two that you can trust. And in the case of yourself and Malcolm, it was a two that you could trust, but both of you sort of eventually said, I can't sit next to this other person. And that's fine. And you can get to four or five and then sort of figure that out. But it's much harder to get to that point in the game if you don't have that sort of person. So are you seeing any sort of these pairings develop in the game? And if so, do you think that could they exist beyond if they were separated here in this tribe swap? Like you and Malcolm were?
You know, right now, everything just there's so many moving parts right now. I haven't seen anyone that jumps out for me right now that's so solidified, that's in kind of that lockstep. You know, Malcolm and I were, and I wouldn't call it lockstep, but we had definitely kind of solidified a trust very early on. And with the way the tribes have already split, you know, it feels like it keeps moving. You know, we had, you know, with Tasha and now Tasha and Savage have kind of paired together, and Varner and Abby. And so, I mean, other than just seeing Cass and Joe talk, you know, I don't see Keith. I haven't seen anything with Keith pairing up with anyone. Kelly, you know, by default is there with Terry, but again, she's thrown him under the bus already. You know, I would love to see Stephen and Spencer. That's what I would love. I would love to see that. So, but again, we haven't really gotten to see, you know, have they reconnected? Have they talked?
Yeah, see, that would be a good new wrinkle on the Steven and JT. Instead of a new JT, Steven finds somebody who's probably closer to another Steven. Mm-hmm. And then, so it's like he doesn't have to sit at the end with somebody who's going to like, oh, everybody's gushing about JT. But so then sits there with somebody that's a little bit maybe more like himself than a JT. That's probably a better move.
Yeah, I think it'd be a great pairing. So whether or not that starts to unfold, you know, in the other tribes, I'm not sure, you know, how those pairings might end up, or if we're going to see that, you know, how we're going to see that pairing, but it could be interesting. That's for sure.
Well, Denise, I have to say that I feel like this new Angkor tribe, that this tribe that Abby is on with Tasha and Savage and now Wu and Varner, this tribe has definitely given me a little bit of a Matt Singh vibe, I have to say.
But why? Why do you think that, Rob?
Why do I think that? Because I think
they're awesome. You don't think they're going to win every challenge from here forward?
Well, don't these things are really a product of momentum? Because, you know, that back in the Survivor Philippines, Tan Dang had the luxury of, you know, you guys lose that first challenge with Zane. Yeah. And, you know, and some of these challenges were somewhat close. And a couple of them turned out to be blowouts. But then, you know, you lose the first challenge. And now all of a sudden, these other tribes in this three tribe format, now they get to sit out their worst person in this challenge. And now you have to play everybody, and you have to play Jeff Varner with, you know, with whatever health issues that he has. And now, instead of Tan Dang sitting out Abby Maria every single challenge, now this Angkor tribe, they've got to have Abby Maria running every single one of these challenges, while the other tribes, they just, every time that, oh, okay, well, this per, okay, Cass isn't good at this, so let's sit her out at this one. Okay. And then, you know, oh, Monica's not good at this, let's sit her out of this one. And so it's such a momentum builder. Yeah. And then again, if they lose again this week, now, okay, now we'll sit our two worst people out of this challenge. And now, okay, whoever is left from that group is now. Mm-hmm. So it just snowballs in this three tribe format. And I definitely feel like we're headed in that Matt Singh direction. However, Denise, we always talk about the intentional Matt Singh and the people that are born out of this trial by trial by ambush, if you're Cass, or trial by fire, and iron sharpens iron. Don't you think, just like you, that you went to every single tribal council, don't you think the people that survive out of this Angkor disaster, the people that get up and walk away from this car wreck, don't you think that those people will be the most battle tested and have the chance to go very deep into this game?
Maybe, but would they want to? Like, the intentional Matt Singh, no way. Like, could they go forward? Possibly, but, or is somebody going to say, great, here's another reason to take them out. They have a better story. You know, if people are thinking long-term who's sitting at the end, then you don't want somebody like that again. You don't want somebody that's been able to do the, which I think that's horrible to even think of, intentional Matt singing. Oh my God, nobody would want to do that. But yeah, it gives them a better story. Like, they've survived through this. They've now survived being a tribe that has no food, which is...
Denise, I've thought about this a lot. This is intentional Matt Singh. It's like, if you could get a situation like you and Malcolm had, where it's like, okay, we know we're the tightest two here. We know that we're going to be the last two people here. Why not, you know, at the point, maybe you don't go out and try for me, but once you lose the first challenge, it's like, okay, well, why don't we just run this down? Because we have not yet seen where the other tribes, when they get to the merge, they're worried about each other. Tan Dang is worried about Calabar. The two tribes are saying, well, they're the other two powerhouses. We're not seeing the situation where the other two tribes that are mostly fully stocked are saying, well, let's just pick off the little guy. Let's just pick off these two, because let's just finish the job and then we'll worry about each other. That you guys become the swing votes. That I think that this is a great situation. Plus, you get the most airtime. You probably come back for All Stars.
I don't have it in me to do that. I just don't. Like, do you have any, like, it was the most miserable experience, and the anxiety that comes from, you know, if you're somebody who can manage the anxiety that's going to come from, okay, you've lost somebody else and now you have to do more work and you have to reconfigure and now you have to go into these new tribes. And if you're somebody who can do that and manage the anxiety with that and the stress with that, power to you, man. If you want to go intentional Matt Singh, I could never do it intentionally again. Like, and I can understand. I see what you're saying. You know, that idea of, you know, then you get in and they're ready to kind of eat themselves, which is kind of what Tan Dang was somewhat ready to do. But, you know, it's, I don't know. It's risky though. It's like, you know, how many other times have you seen it happen? You know, it's kind of like saying, like, yeah, that stock was really good. You know, I totally risked and put it all on that and I got, you know, got really lucky. But mm-hmm. if the history is not there to show that this works consistently, not a plan I want to do. Like, I definitely am not. I just don't have it in me to throw a challenge.
And also, I feel like it's a little bit different with these tribes that have already been Bion and Takeo. It's not like if Andrew and Tasha are the only two people that survive this Angkor tribe, that yeah. if they get to the merge, and that's probably the bad example because they'll have the numbers, but it's not like people won't say, okay, let's not target them because we're trying to go after the other tribe. You know, they'll still be exactly. they'll still be targets. Or if it was to KO people that walked away from it, it's not like they wouldn't just get pagonged because. And again, who knows if these tribal lines will halt? But so it's not exactly the same. I still think there's something to it there in the three tribe format where you start with three tribes.
Well, I think you need to go back out there. Then you.
No, I'm good, Denise.
Let's just put you back out there. You like that intentional Matt Singh? Let's see you try and run that.
Denise,
one.
I won't make it through the intentional Matt Singh. I'll be like the Zane or the Roxy. Believe me, I've been on a three tribe season. I know how this goes.
So you just want to see the train wreck that is somebody else trying to do it?
Yes. Yes.
All right. So let's see.
All right. Talk to me about some of these other people that we haven't talked about too much. Who are some other people that you're liking this season?
Oh my gosh. Well, I can definitely tell you Kelly Wentworth was not someone who was high on my radar screen going in simply because we hadn't seen much about her, you know, just with, you know, early boot in her own season or, you know, not getting to see that much of her. But she is just, you know, it's fun to watch her because there are parts of it that I'm watching her and it's like watching the game that I would have liked to have been able to have played or where I would hope in my head I could play, whether or not that would ever happen. You know, just, you know, having the, you know, the guts to be able to, you know, get the idol from, you know, from the challenge to play it so incredibly smart to actually keep it quiet. You know, she knew exactly what she needed to do coming into to KO. Because there's no time to just sit. You know, you can't come into a tribe that small and just sit and hope things are going to settle out. You know, she had to start working right away and get a target off of her, you know, being in the minority. You know, she needed to get that target off of her. Didn't have to, you know, luckily didn't have to go to tribal council and actually see if that was effective, but she's already started planting that seed and getting the heat off of her. So I really am enjoying watching Kelly play. Love seeing her play. You know, Wigglesworth, just because, you know, early seasons, I'm curious to see kind of how the rest of things are, you know, the rest of the season is going to play out for her, just because I'm not hearing, you know, we're not hearing a ton from her. You know, and several that I just don't have a sense of, you know, Monica and Kimmy, I just don't have a good feel for. Steven, obviously as a know-it-all, I would just love to see him kind of really find his footing now that he's in this new tribe and, you know, again, be able to kind of solidify an alliance and really start, you know, marching forward.
What are you seeing from Steven from a body language perspective? Are you feeling good about what you're seeing, or are you seeing some issues there?
You know, now I think I'm trying to think of from this, because again, we didn't see as much in, you know, from him in this last episode that I'm thinking, but, you know, just even in some of the secret scenes, his, you know, his confidence in being in this new tribe, you know, it just shot up. It's like when Malcolm and I got split into the, you know, into the two tribes, it's like Christmas morning. It's like, oh my gosh, there's hope, you know, there's hope. And I'm with a different group of people and the dynamics are different. And I think he's seeing, you know, he can fit in here differently. Versus, I think he's I think I heard him call it the bro. I don't know, man, bro tribe, or how he was defining, you know, the original Bayan tribe. But you know, just watching him before, it was just, he's like out of his element. I mean, he just seems like he feels so out of his element.
I feel like he just psyched himself out with that. I mean, Jeremy is still there. It's just basically, it's, you know, Andrew and Joe and Keith are gone. But the other people are still there from that tribe. I feel like that he just was too much in his head, I think, with that stuff.
Well, exactly. And so now you've got Spencer there, who's someone who is definitely more in his head and, you know, analytical and, you know, doesn't, you know, you're not looking around camp and seeing these, you know, Joe Goddess, you know, Joe God and, you know, Terry, you know, these kind of guys, or Keith, you know, these kind of guys, you know, that can definitely be intimidating. And so I can definitely understand how he was feeling out of his element. So I'm really glad to see, you know, him get another shot at this. And
he was giddy in the secret scenes.
Oh my gosh. It's funny, isn't it? It's funny to watch. So, but I'm happy for him. I really am. Cause I remember feeling like, you know, like, it's like this rebirth of, oh my gosh, I'm still in it. I'm in it for another 3 days and that's all I need. I just need 3 more days or a day, you know, day at a time. And that's, again, what I've, you know, heard, you know, Kelly is playing a similar game in that way of just, I don't have to make any gigantic moves right now or any huge moves. I just need to be here. I just need to be here for another day, you know, another 3 days, you know, for Wigglesworth. And so, yeah, so I'm saying there's some really strong players out there right now.
It's a good season. Let me get your professional opinion on this Spencer story. Okay. I want to play this for you.
Okay.
When my current girlfriend started saying, like, I love you, I didn't say it back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I didn't want to, like...
No, that's really good, though. You're not supposed to, yeah.
Yeah, she still, like, feels like, you know...
You haven't said it yet?
No.
Oh, snap!
Have you ever... Has somebody ever told you a story in therapy and you respond, oh, snap?
Oh, snap!
Probably not, oh, snap. I'm pretty genuine in my session, so I'm sure I've said a few other choice words. Oh, snap is probably not one of them, but definitely I've had those kind of reactions like, oh, okay, how's that working for you?
Oh, snap.
Yeah, yep. I felt for him, you know, but again, you know, here he's trying to connect with Jeremy and, you know, clearly he and his girlfriend are most likely in a very different place right now. And I think I've heard word that everything's all good on that front, but yeah, no, I've definitely had, you know, clients like that where it's, you know, they're struggling or, you know, he's young and this is, you know, I don't know if this is one of Spencer's first, you know, long-term relationships. I have no idea what, you know, what his dating, his love life has been like. And, but so he's growing, he's going to be okay.
Okay. He's going to be okay. So
he's going to be just fine.
All right. So you think he's on the right track. He doesn't need any help.
No, I think Spencer is doing just fine. Yep. He doesn't need my help for sure.
Is there anybody that you're seeing this season that you are getting some not so great vibes from what they're doing?
Woo. And it's not, I think Woo just has to, yeah, I might take that back. You know, I think I'm just Woo because Woo is so passive, or it feels like he's so passive.
Well, I would love to just get into the psychology of this with Woo, because I think it's so interesting of somebody who in his season, he made this gigantic error in judgment. And again, I don't know if you buy into what he's saying of like, you know, I just wanted to, you know, I want to take on the best competition in the end. And so he goes to the end with Tony when he could have gone with Cass, and he probably would have won if he takes Cass. But then he has to come back into the game with this burden on himself. And I don't know how much he's beating himself up or how much he's thinking about it. But are you seeing anything that speaks to how he actually feels about that decision?
About the decision from his original season?
Yes, and now coming back into the game with a second chance.
Yeah, you know, no, I'm kind of seeing, it feels like for me, I'm seeing the same Woo. You know, it's that I at least I don't get a great sense that he's thinking back to how he's going to do something differently. You know, he's just talking about, you know, staying loyal with the four, you know, when they first got back and into Anchor, you know, can we just keep the, you know, keep four strong? And, you know, I think just his own kind of values and his, you know, personality is just kind of that integrity and that loyalty. And, you know, he's, you know, hopeful that, you know, people are telling him what they need to tell him. And I don't know. No, I'm not, I guess I'm not seeing anything that's jumping out at me though, that he's really processing how he himself needs to play this game differently this time around.
Yeah.
Which on the one hand for Tasha and Savage, that's good for them. You know, because they have an opportunity with Woo, if he's playing kind of that same game, they have an opportunity to really, again, kind of vet him and pull him in. And he, I think, you know, and if they did that and again, are keeping him in the loop and are staying consistent with him, I think Woo could be a great ally.
Yeah. Where's he going? He's not going to flip on you.
No, you know, definitely not. You know, now he might, you know, clearly, you know, I don't know where Woo's going to go. I think he has some opportunities, but it's, yeah, I'm not sure where that's going to play out. Are you seeing changes like that, Rob? Like, are you seeing him play a different game or regretting that decision?
No, I think it's been a very similar game to Kagyan. And I kind of felt like that, what is Woo going to do? Is Woo going to come into this game and look for a new Tony? Is Woo going to come into this game and try to be the Tony? But it seems like that Woo has been, at times, he's been a little bit more defiant, specifically like last week when we saw him with Shireen and Spencer, and it seemed like he kind of like was happy to tell those guys off.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. That's sort of like a little bit of an edge to him. But, you know, this week, you know, he was like really like, okay, everybody, let's just not do anything crazy. So he didn't want to do anything sort of wild, but no, I really have not seen any sort of baggage from him or as Abby Maria was said at tribal council, you know, I am baggage. No. Yeah.
Big bang.
Yes. Do you feel like that we've gotten the answer on the is it cultural question with Abby Maria?
I don't know. You know, I'm going to dig myself into the hole after this podcast that I'll have dug for myself will be so big. But no, some of the things, the language pieces, those are definitely cultural. You know, it's like people, you know, shred her for, you know, things that she says. And that's definitely cultural. You know, English is not her first language. And I understand that, you know, her grasp of that at times, and especially under high stress, is not always going to be great. But the rest of it, no, it's for me, you know, from, you know, whether or not I look at it from a, you know, just from my experience with her in the game, it's personality. It's Abby. That's who Abby is. These are parts of her personality that she may not love and others may not love, but they're a part of who she is, along with many other things. But it is what it is.
Yeah, I have to say, because I'm a little bit concerned also, because I feel like, I'm doing my job here. I'm talking about what I'm seeing on TV, but the thing that I just can't get out of the back of my mind is
with me, your dad,
and I don't want to be dead.
Right, exactly.
So
you got to kind of dance around that one a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I want to ask you some questions from the listeners of the podcast.
Sure.
First question that I have for you, Jeremy Berman wants to know, who from Survivor Philippines would you like to see get a second chance? I guess besides yourself.
Oh, from Survivor Philippines. You know who I think just from purely an entertainment standpoint, I think Zane could be fun.
Zane, yes. Oh, I love Zane.
I mean, quite honestly, you know, he's a sweet guy. And from, you know, from just pure entertainment, confessional value, he'd be a blast.
Yeah, I think that would be very fun. I feel like Angie, her name was in the mix for Survivor Second Chance when there was like a rumor floating around. Okay, here are the 36 names or whatever. I feel like she was in the mix. Do you think that Angie deserves a second chance?
No. No, sorry. I love Angie to death. She's a sweet girl, but no, I don't think that the island is a great place for her. I just don't.
Yeah. Let's try to think of who else from the Philippines should get a second chance. What about Pete or Artis?
Pete kind of had his pot stirring. You know, Artis, we didn't really get to see it play out as much. Yeah, I think either of them would be good. You know, and again, you know, I think definitely from a drive point and from a strategy point, they'd be aggressive players coming back out there, no doubt. So I think, both of them from a strategy point of view, they'd be solid ones going back out there.
Well, let's not get carried away, Denise.
I think it's much time with them. You know, I mean, really, it's hard to answer that to some extent because I didn't get much time with them in the game. You know, I mean, I did that merge, but in terms of actually talking with Pete, you know, I might have said one sentence to Pete. That might have been my only conversation with him in the game.
Should RC have come back?
RC could be definitely entertaining. She, you know, definitely kind of for the same, I think some of the same reasons with Abby. You know, RC has that same potential for conflict to happen, you know, from a strategic point of view. She definitely, you know, thinks hard about the game. Physically, you know, definitely she's in, you know, great shape to be able to do, especially why, you know, from water, she did great in challenges. Mm-hmm. So definitely, you know, but I can understand, you know, if, you know, even with this season, like, this probably wouldn't have been a season she would have chosen with Abby.
Jeff Kent was in the mix for this. I think ultimately he declined. Do you think that Jeff Kent should play again?
I would love to see Jeff Kent again.
I would too.
I really enjoyed playing with him. You know, he would have to work on his social game. You know, it's kind of like hearing, you know, Terry and work on his social game, you know, and that's just, again, who Jeff is. You know, that's not really something that he invested a great deal of time with out there, other than with, you know, having, you know, pockets of conversation with people that were probably just a little bit, you know, more just kind of lifestyle and age with him. But no, he'd be awesome.
And then the other one, who I came away very impressed with from Survivor Philippines, my rewatch, Lisa Welchel. Do you think that Lisa will ever play again?
I don't think there's a chance.
Really?
I don't think so.
You don't, no. Because she doesn't want to, or because they don't want to have her back?
No, I think they would have her back. I don't think she would. Yeah. At least, you know, I know it was, the game was so hard on her.
I know.
It was so hard on her.
But you know what? Denise, I thought she was better than I think we gave her credit for, at least at the time. And I think that in my mind, I think I thought that she was more of like, you know, in the way that Dawn was having a lot of hashtag Survivor breakdown. And I feel like those two seasons back to back, I think I sort of like blended them a little bit. Like, I feel like that Lisa did have some game. I feel like that it was underreported story.
Well, because, and you really have to be paying attention. Like, yeah, there was a lot of crying, but there were also, you know, conversations where she was talking about having to manage Mike. You know, her, you know, speeches or the things that she would say at tribal council, she was laying out strategy. I mean, very clearly, you know, I can go this, I mean, kind of playing through kind of what her strategy was or what was happening in the game with the tribe. That, no, I think you're right. I think very much it, you know, we kind of, and probably us even as a tribe initially, you know, or as tribe mates, kind of like, oh my gosh, this hot mess on the island, you know, love her to death. But wow, like, you know, her whole thing about, you know, I ran, I fell down, I got up, I, you know, fell down again. And, but in hindsight, looking back, no, I think, you know, there was definitely more strategy there, but I just think emotionally, I can't imagine her Rob going back out there.
Well, I think the interesting human drama about Lisa was almost like that. She was like, I know the right move to make. I just don't know if I can make it. And I feel like the second time that you play, and again, not in the case of Dawn, but I think that you're a little more emotionally detached from it the second time around, as opposed to the first time when everything, you know, the experience is so new. Mm-hmm. And I think that you sort of like understand more that it's a game the second time around. So I feel like that for Lisa, who knew a lot of times what the right move strategically was, but struggled morally with whether or not she should be doing it, I feel like maybe it might go better the second time around, but who knows?
Yeah, and maybe. And that's kind of what Tasha was saying, I think, in some of her interviews, you know, in terms of, you know, kind of her experience the first time through and from kind of her own faith base and kind of how hard it was and kind of looking at it. I mean, so she's kind of an example that kind of feels for me similar to Lisa in that sense that, you know, from kind of her own values is coming back in able to play a very different game. So maybe, I don't know, I'd be shocked, but, you know, stranger things have happened.
Okay. Tamir Markowitz wants to know, does Denise think Varner has what it takes to survive every tribal council like you did?
Oh my gosh. I would love it. And yes, he can talk. The man can talk. And I don't know how he can say the stuff at tribal council that he does, but then he gets away with it. Or there's something about him that absolutely, I think he knows what to say. I don't think he is as, you know, he comes off as, you know, kind of this clueless bumbling at times, but no, I think he knows exactly what he's doing, you know? And yeah, I think it'd be awesome. That'd be great. I'd love it.
Okay. I think that Varner, I don't know if he can survive this. I feel like it's very hard to go to every single tribal council. I don't think that, and you were at times under the radar. I think you kind of need to be under the radar to get to every tribal council. If you're that much on the radar, like, chances are eventually your number is going to come up.
But maybe, though, do you think, though, if they get to emerge, though, and there are other, if some of those other men are there, or you get Abby that can be some heat, maybe that gets him through some of that. But you're right. I think that's a good point that, yeah, you have to be a little bit playing a little bit of a quieter game. And he's definitely not a quiet player, which thankfully it's making it a great season.
This is a question from Ziopang, who wants to know, Abby Maria said that Kelly Wigglesworth reminded her of you. Do you see that comparison? Do you see any parallels between yourself and Kelly Wigglesworth, which would make Abby Maria say that Kelly Wigglesworth reminds her of you?
I think just the quietness is what kind of the quietness. I think Kelly is a thinker, you know, and so she's not, you know, and I don't know if Abby was just picking up on that from, you know, mostly pregame or once they were actually in the tribe, but there might be similarities, you know, in the way that she thinks about the game, definitely in the way that Kelly thinks about, you know, I just have to be here. Like, I just need another day. It's that whole being able to adapt and reconfigure day by day. But I'm not sure what, else it is, but something, yeah, something struck her that just, you know, like she's that I'm not sure. I'll be curious sometime down the road to talk to Abby and say, what was it? Like, what made her feel that way? So I don't know.
Jessica Frey wants to know, what advice would you give to Abby Maria? And did you give her any advice before she left?
No, I didn't give her any advice before she left. Didn't have any communication with anyone before they left. You know, Abby's just got to tone it down. I mean, that's it. You know, it's being able to not be so aggressive or so mistrusting. And especially with female players, you know, she does better with that, I think, with male players. But yeah, she's just, I don't even know how to describe that to her. Like, you just got to relax. You have to start believing that not everybody is out to get you, even though in this game, everybody's out to get you. You just can't lead your day from that point of view, or that's what you get, you know, you get that, those blow ups. But yeah, that's the only thing I can think of with her.
If you could tell her something now, what would it be? Same thing?
At this very moment. Yeah. I just say, you know, like if I were to try and encourage Abby now, you know, about getting, you know, moving forward, you know, it's like even with Wu, I'd probably be trying, you know, if I were in Abby's pocket right now, I'd probably trying to be able to encourage her not to, you know, not to disregard Wu, because I think she's already starting down that path because she mistrusts him now. Like, that's the second time. So now he's dead to her. And, you know, that's, you know, and to say you can't, like in a tribe of six, you can't do that. You need to keep everyone that's potentially connected to you close to you, you know, in some way, shape or form. And so she's got to set kind of some of that mistrust or that, you know, you betrayed me, those feelings of betrayal kind of aside and just think what's really going to get you to the game. You need alliances and people to help you get to the end of the game. And if you keep getting pissed off at them and cutting them out, eventually there's nobody left.
Shayna Carroll wants to know, do you believe that leopards can change their spots or merely recognize their spots or neither?
I think leopards can change their spots.
Okay.
I truly believe it. Yeah, I do.
What's the best way that we can do that? Because I always like to look at this, you know, we're talking about Survivor, but I always like to try to, you know, see what we can actually take away from all this nonsense for our own lives. So what's really the most important step in that?
Find a good therapist. Honestly, find a good therapist or find some friends that are willing to be honest with you about what drives you crazy. You know, what drives them crazy about you.
And what do you do? I mean, do you sit down with your friends and you ask them about the things that they think you need to change? Or do you sort of just like, here's a thing I think I need to change?
I think you can do it in a way that's, you know, very kind of structured way to do it. But, you know, I can tell you, I have, you know, two, you know, really close dear friends of mine here. And, you know, we give each other crap all the time. You know, they tell me, you know, oh my God, and he's like, you're such a control freak. Like, you, it's routine, routine, routine. And so, you know, they've over the years made me very aware of traits that I have that I have to watch out for. And I have to kind of, and they make me kind of challenge, you know, and they'll tease me. So they have figured me out enough that they know how they can kind of tease me and push me to kind of challenge a, you know, whatever, like if it's, yeah, no, on Friday nights, we always have pizza. So, you know, we can't go have a hamburger. And I'm not saying that that's what, but, you know, they'll tease me like, really, you can't go do that. So it's having friends that, you know, you trust and you really value their opinion. And if you're really interested in personality change, I mean, if you are truly interested in that, I mean, you have to be willing to take the feedback. And, you know, that feedback is hard sometimes because sometimes, you know, myself included, you hear things that you don't want to hear, you know, or feedback that I got even from my, you know, for my season. It's like, wow, that really is a trait that I have. And, you know, it's not really an attractive trait. And then you have to figure out if there's enough payoff to change it. You know, it's like, for example, with Abby right now, you know, there's, you know, on the one hand, again, I think her intentions to change were so good, but there's also even in her real life in related with Survivor, there's enough positive feedback for her about being a villain that kind of takes away the motivation to really change that. Strange way. If you know, if that makes sense, it's like, you know, she gets enough good stuff coming back from people that say, we love you and you're Brazilian fire, or we love that you're a villain. And you know, that probably feels pretty good. And it takes away some of the motivation to do something different.
That's very interesting. In terms of getting that sort of feedback, I'm very lucky, Denise, because I get all sorts of comments from people that tell me all the things that I need to change. So I don't need that support system of friends.
No, you might just need the therapist.
Yeah, but that's very interesting. All that stuff about how we can go about trying to make those changes, because it's really, you know, I think that all of us have something that we feel like we want to change about ourselves, not just people that are coming back for survivors or things that we think that are holding us back. And it's such a fascinating thing as we go through our lives of, are we able to make that change of those things that are what we think is holding us back? And if that is ultimately the thing that does hold us back.
Absolutely. And you can do the same thing with any kind of just behavior change. You just have to make a commitment to start. Try and do something different and start the process.
And then to follow up with that, Rob Kirk wants to know, how can players seek to correct the mistakes from their first games without overcorrecting too much? And who do you think is doing the best with that so far? So you're trying to deal with these things that, whether it's, you know, you're the survivor player or you're the person, okay, I'm going to fix this thing or I'm going to change this thing about me. How do you make sure that you are changing it to the degree that you need to and not overcorrecting and creating an entirely different problem?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how you don't do that because it's just really inherent with behavior and personality change. I mean, that people kind of swing from one side, one continuum to the next. You know, it's like I have people who, you know, when I think of it in therapy, that have struggled with being able to be assertive and set boundaries or with anybody. And so we'll start working on it. And all of a sudden, they go so far past being assertive and they're the Abby Maria aggressive. And so I think it's hard. And then we have to work to bring it back. So again, I think part of that is, you know, that working on not overcorrecting is a part of, you know, we talked earlier about having that one other person in the game, that one other person in the game that can kind of ground you, that you can check things out with, that can kind of check you. And I think that's maybe one of the ways that could prevent that. I don't know that I'm seeing that yet. And I don't know that I'm really seeing over correction yet. You know, like Spencer's, it's a good balance. You know, I think other people are just kind of, I don't think Cass is overcorrected. You know, so far, I don't think we're seeing it too far to an extent. We're seeing maybe under correction.
Well, bring it back to you and Malcolm. Were those the kinds of things that you guys would talk about in your game together? I know that you guys were incredibly close in the game. Was that the sort of thing where you notice that he's doing something or he notices that you're doing something that you guys could make those changes on the fly?
You know, he never corrected each other like in that way, but I can tell you, you know, on the beach, you know, even just where you lay at night, you know, I can tell you, you know, just towards the end of the game, and it was when things were getting really intense with Abby and, you know, just being able to have him, it was after a reward challenge. So this would be an example of how I utilized Malcolm, and Abby had come back from the reward with Malcolm, and the first thing she had done, and I honestly, Rob, don't think she had any clue that she did this. She has no clue to this day. I don't think that, well, she might now, but that she did this. But the first thing, they had washed their hair, and so she smelled apparently very nice. And the first thing she did was she sat down next to me on our bench, and she shoved her hair in my face.
Yeah.
And she says, "Smell my hair." And I'm like, what did you just do? Like, you don't do that. Like, what? And it was, and the day had just gone on and on and on. And so it was more for me with Malcolm than later that night,
You
know, going to sleep and laying down and turning to him and just saying, you know, basically venting to him like, oh my God, I just want to kill this woman. You know, and I have used words on the island that I don't typically use in real life, you know, to describe women. And yeah. I'm not proud of that, but I know that that was, you know, and so it was more that to be able to have somebody that I knew.
To vent.
Malcolm was not going to, to vent. He wasn't going to go tell her, oh my gosh, guess what Denise called you down by the, no, he laughed. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, I just needed to say that because she's driving me crazy. And so it was that piece of being able to have a little bit of, I just have to vent at how much she's driving me crazy.
Yeah. I remember that scene also from watching it over the summer, and she's going on and on and on about how great it is and how much they ate and she's full. And my favorite part of that is that after she goes on and on and on about like what a great time that they had, Penner like very unenthusiastically says, rewards are fun. Like
and they didn't even show, I mean, what got shown was just a fraction of what took place, because Penner was chewing her out. CBS didn't show, you know, me basically saying, you are absolutely insufferable, woman, you know, and just calling her out on it, because it was just miserable. It was absolutely miserable. But I truly don't think in that moment, she wasn't doing it to try and piss us off. She was doing it because she simply wasn't aware that that's how she was impacting everyone around her. It's like there are blinders on her.
You know, what's missing this season is that you guys got the wine bottles, and then Abby Maria used to walk around like drinking water out of the wine bottle. And it seemed like that she was just like, you know, walking around with like a bottle of wine all the time. And it's very funny to watch in that season. I wish she still had that.
Maybe it really was. Maybe that's what went on all season. Maybe she was just drunk. Maybe that would make it so much better.
That would make it easy. If it was the, what is it? The acai vodka?
Yeah, there we go. Which I've never tried. I'll try sometime.
Hear it's fantastic.
It always sounds good. We just don't get it in Iowa. I'd have to have it shipped out here. So
Jonathan Amoris wants to know, is there anything that PG could have done differently in dealing with Abby?
With Abby, you know, the only thing I can think of is when Abby came to her, you know, when Abby came up to Woo and Woo and herself at that point was just to absolutely cow down, agree. Absolutely. What do you think? No, we'd like to vote with you. We want to stay strong with you. The only thing I can think of is reassure, reassure, reassure. Definitely don't bring up the past conflict. That's the only thing I can think of. And I honestly don't know. I think once Abby's mind was kind of set on, you know, her perception of PG and her mistrust of PG, it's game over.
Denise, Brady Myers wants to know, I think it's worth a mention that PG, like Vetus, is also sitting in the correct boot order in the cursed picture.
It's just the whole conspiracy theory, like the conspiracy theory of who's going to get, so who's next?
Maybe it's every other week.
Maybe, because is that how conspiracies work? They kind of keep you on your toes. They don't really want you to understand what's going
on. Okay, so in the cursed picture, of course, Vetus is sitting in the first boot seat. Then Sierra is next to him. She seems like she's safe. Then PG. The next person over is Keith Nail, so he's safe next week.
Yeah.
But the person who is right next to Keith Nail is Jeff Varner.
What just bit my ass?
Maybe they're onto something. If it goes the whole season and it works out that way, they might have something.
Every other episode.
Every other episode that it falls in that.
So do you believe in the superstition of the curse picture?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I believe that we will find what we look for. That's what I believe in anything in life.
The truth is out there, Denise.
Yep. Whatever truth you're seeking, you're going to find.
I can't just put my head in the sand and pretend that the cursed picture isn't real.
I don't think so. No.
Okay. All right. So a couple more questions for you. Let's talk about Umberto wants to know, is Abby an ally you want? And he says, interestingly, is she a blessing to have in the opposing alliance? Is there anything that you could do like a Trojan horse to get her to be working with your enemies?
Do you mean like having her basically play a role to go do that?
Well, it's almost like if she's working against you, it's bad for that vote, but then you kind of feel like by the next vote, then you have a chance to win her back.
Maybe. She's just...
Or can you win her back? Because it seems like if you F with her.
With me, you're dead.
You're dead. So is it just like, are we running out of people who have not F'd with her yet?
I think you will very soon run out of people who haven't F'd with her. You know, and that's, I think it's too chancy. You know, I just don't see being able to do that consistently enough where you're not going to get burned doing it.
Very tricky situation.
It is.
John Davis wants to know, are there any specific personality types that casting should seek out in future seasons that could be viable players while still throwing a monkey wrench into the rational game?
Oh, you know what? That is one area I won't even speak to, because clearly after this many seasons, CBS is doing something right. Right. I mean, they have been this, you know, the Survivor's been on the air for, you know, longer than many other series. So, you know, they know their formula, and whether or not we always like the formula, they keep finding ways to make it different. So in terms of personality types, you know, there are definitely those roles that they keep going back to. And that's why, you know, we can kind of all from maybe our seasons kind of go, oh, that, you know, they fill these familiar roles. But I think they're pretty well covered.
Here's another question about change and growth. Josh Olson wants to know, what's more difficult, a strategic game bot like Spencer learning to connect with people emotionally, or an emotional player thinking things through logically?
Oh, it depends on the person. Totally depends on the person. And it depends on motivation. I mean, you have to look at what's the motivation for change. It's risk versus reward, motivation for change. Maturity. There's just so many other, because I've worked with clients on both sides of that, where, and they can both be challenging, but you know, but not really one over the other in terms of what you're trying to bring out or calm down.
Then I have a question, or so much of a statement, from Mike Ramone, who says, no question, just a newfound respect for your saint-like amount of tolerance in spending 35 plus days with Abby Maria.
I don't know if she'd call it saint-like.
Yeah.
But I tried. But thanks, Mike. It takes a lot of patience.
Now, Abby Maria voted for you at the end of the game, though.
You know, but look at who I was sitting next to. You know, that's, I mean,
How dare you, Denise?
I know. That sounds really, and I don't mean it. That came out really wrong. That's not what I meant in terms of my comparison to them, but her relationship to them. You know, Lisa had already, again, you know, it was the betrayal, like, you were with me, you were against. And so they'd had that ongoing. So there was already the betrayal with that. You know, she clearly, you know, Mike, again, to this day, you know, I will never understand, because I didn't have those early days with him the way the rest of Tandang did. You know, I had a great relationship with Mike. You know, Abby clearly thought he was a moron.
And an idiot.
But, you know, I also do believe that I was able to figure out what I knew Abby needed to hear in that tribal council.
Yeah.
You know, in her challenging me and saying, you know, hey, you demoralized me. You made me feel this big.
Yeah, I have the transcript right here.
Yeah.
Abby Maria said to you, you made it very clear you did not respect my game, that I was an unlikable person. And being the most unlikable person is not the label I wanted to leave here with. I was demoralized. I was made to look this little, Denise.
I did. And I know I made her feel that way in the game.
Yeah.
And I probably did say those things. And so in that moment, I knew, you know, if I wanted to lose her vote, I needed to get defensive.
Yes.
You know, the one way to lose her vote would have been to be defensive in any way. So I gave her an apology that I felt was enough for her, but let me still stand up and be assertive in the game.
Yes.
Because I didn't want to lose anybody else's votes.
You said, hindsight is 20/20. And as much as there may be many sentiments in what I said that I will still stand behind, there may have been a different way for me to handle it. And I do apologize if you were truly traumatized by that. If you were truly demoralized by that, I do apologize, because that's not my intention. But our philosophies on our strategies just don't match.
So there's kind of where I took that apology back a little bit, but I was very genuine. But I think
you said the A word. I think she was happy.
Yeah, and I do, and that was, quite honestly, that was a genuine apology, because it never was my intention to make her feel the way that she clearly felt, or at least, you know, was saying that she felt in the game. And you know, I'm not in her head, I'm not in her body, so I don't, you know, there's no way for me to judge the truth in what she is saying she experienced. But, you know, she needed to hear that from me. And, you know, luckily I had the awareness to know that's what she needs to hear. And, You know, I think luckily she respected enough of the rest of my game and the ability to still be in the game after, again, attending all the tribal councils that she gave me her vote.
Denise, last question. You are our Abby Maria expert. You played with her in the Philippines. You're a winner in this game. You've been through Matt Singh. So factor all of these equations together. We probably imagine that this Angkor tribe is going to the next tribal council. So this is from Bridget Gibson. She wants to know, if Angkor goes to tribal council next week, do you think Abby will vote with Savage and Tasha or with Wu and Varner?
Ooh, I don't think she'll vote with Wu. I think if Abby is leading it, it will be her leading. I think she's more likely to vote with Savage and Tasha and Varner jumping over with them. Unless Tasha, I don't know.
It's very tricky because she doesn't like Wu.
Right.
But Tasha and Andrew will probably want to keep Wu around and vote out Varner, but she has a connection with Varner.
Yep. And he's good at managing her. So I have all these names written down in arrows and I don't know. I think part of it will determine in terms of not necessarily where Abby will vote, but who will try and hang on to her will depend on, you know, we saw the preview to next week and it looks like life's going to get a little miserable, which we know is really good for Abby's mood. And, you know, depending on, you know, how that affects relationships at their camp, could affect kind of, again, not only going into the next challenge, but if they go back to tribal council, maybe Tasha rethinking, like, is this really a good idea to keep Abby, you know, under the wing versus, you know, Varner or Wu or, you know, try, or just Wu. I mean, just swap out Wu and you've got your loyal, you know, your loyal ally.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm interested to find out.
The other thing that they could do potentially is not even bother with Abby Maria, just get Wu on board and then just vote out Varner.
Yep, exactly. And then they can take care of Abby later on. But we've also heard that before. We can take care of Abby later.
Is that a good idea or a bad idea to leave a spurned Abby Maria in the game? Do you have to just vote her out at that point if you're not going to do what she wants?
I prefer to be someone who likes less moving parts. And so my preference would be to vote her out, mainly because, again, like you said, if she's spurned, and then it comes back to, you know, if there's, you know, when there's a merge, it's not going to be if, you know, when there's a merge back, you know, and if Abby's still in the game, she has the potential to just blow crap up, you know, left and right. And, you know, Varner, although quite capable of doing the same, you know, I think it's just, it's easier to see what he's doing and understand or keep him in your alliance because he wants so badly, you know, to do well in the game. I think he's a better bet. So,
Interesting stuff. All right, Denise, thank you so much for coming on with me. I always appreciate it. I love getting your take as a winner with your background in psychology and especially with your PhD in Abby Marie.
Oh, yes. In Abby Maria, maybe. So, yes. Well, thank you for having me. I always love talking about this stuff. So thanks for letting me ramble on for a while and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Okay, so. Are you tweeting about the show this season?
You know, I'm not. I live tweeted for a couple of seasons, and with my daughter, we get home a little bit later, and so I never know exactly when we're going to get to start the show. And so I haven't been live tweeting. I may, as the season goes on,
tweet some blogs coming.
I will definitely, as the, you know, I didn't yesterday because I wanted to save it. I wanted to save it all for you, Rob. So
appreciate it.
I did. So, but after this, yeah, my mouth runs. So I don't have the filter when it comes to stopping my thoughts and giving my opinion on Facebook. So I'm sure I will, you know, please some of the masses and piss off the rest. Okay. So much more ahead.
Well, you could follow Denise on Twitter. She's at GoofyGal1171. And of course, that keep your eyes peeled on Facebook for when she drops one of her hot take blogs. Always, always good. Always sure to get somebody riled up.
You got it.
All right. Denise, do you have a hashtag for this part of the show?
Oh, Crabby Abby. I don't know.
Is Crabby Abby going to get us in trouble?
I could, actually. That could. So, and I don't need to be in any more trouble than
yeah,
I already.
Because, of course, Denise, don't forget.
With me, you're dead.
Yes. I don't want to be dead.
Yeah, but I know she's reading my Facebook, so I don't want to.
How about this? Hashtag we love Abby.
You know what? That's great. And I do love Abby.
Yes.
I do. So I hope she'll, you know, and Abby, feel free to Facebook me, call me. Rob will give you my phone number. I won't.
Yes. And of course, Denise, we are talking about the character that we are seeing for 42 minutes on television, not the person that we have both met and enjoy the company of in real life.
Exactly.
That's
right. She needs to know that. So,
yes. Yes. And if Abby is listening again, we're talking about what is presented on our TV sets.
Yes.
And
before anyone sends death threats, throws tomatoes.
Yes.
With me, you're dead.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Denise, thank you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Hey, go have a great night. Tell Nicole I hope the rest of the pregnancy goes great, and we'll see you on the flip side.
All right. Take care.
You got it. Bye, Rob.
All right, everybody. There you have it. Denise Stapley back here on Rob Has a Podcast, one of my favorite people to talk to about the game here with us, and always very fun with Denise. All right, so let's start to segue into, instead of hearing what me and Denise had to say, let's hear what you guys had to say as we begin to check out the RHAP voicemail for the week. And here to join me is my great friend and podcast co-host. Here is Antonio Mazzaro. Antonio, how are you?
Rob, great friend. That's nice. I'm happy to be your great friend. I feel like sometimes you act like you don't have a lot of friends.
I don't have many friends, especially in real life. I have been very lucky and blessed to have many good friends across the miles.
Yes, friends across the miles. Fam. You can call them fam.
Fam, yes.
What's up, fam? That's what we say.
Great podcast family. And that's probably because that you guys don't ask much of me. I don't have to go too many places. And you guys are a very giving group in the podcast family.
Yeah, I was disappointed when you skipped all of my children's christenings, but that's okay.
Yes. By the way, happy early birthday, Antonio.
Thank you, Rob. It's my early damn birthday.
When is your birthday? Friday?
Friday. So probably as most people are listening to this, I am in fact celebrating my birthday.
Okay. So happy damn birthday to you. Hopefully you don't have to do any dishes.
No dishes. Maybe I can get some surf and turf. Libras are the best. I just love Libras. Are you a Libra or are you
a
cusper? Okay,
no, I
am. Good. Yeah. Libras are the best.
Very much. I'm on the fence about things and the scales.
I like it. Justice is yours.
It's Will Sims also says happy birthday.
Oh, I wish I hadn't been wished happy birthday there.
Happy damn birthday. Mama C had a birthday also this week.
Is that true? She's a Libra as well.
Yeah. Happy
Justice
damn birthday
hers.
To Mama C.
Happy birthday, Mama C.
So, Antonio, of course, we're going to go through all of the voicemails and talk about what is going on Survivor social media and much, much more here today. But before we jump into all that, let me just take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are friends over at Harry's. And Antonio, I know you are a man who takes your facial hair very seriously.
I do. It's one of the most serious things about me.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
And Harry's is the solution for you. If you are looking at the Venn diagram of affordability and quality, Harry's is right there in the middle because they take shaving very seriously, so much so that they have their own razor blade factory in Germany. That's how seriously Harry's is taking the ritual of shaving. I was shaving earlier this week. I got some new shaving gel, and I also have a nice face scrub, very refreshing from Harry's. They've got all sorts of great high quality shaving products that everybody can afford. Stop letting money go down the drain. Because when you're shaving, things go down the drain. That could be your money.
Happens.
That's a metaphor for your money when you watch all of the beard stubble go down the drain. So go ahead, for our listeners right now, we're giving you $5 off your first purchase of the starter set. Coupon code RHAP. Enter the code at checkout and you get the starter set for just $10. That's a month of shaving for $10. You get the razor. You get three German engineered blades and the shaving cream all shipped to your door for free because Harry's delivers the superior shave at an incredible price. So say goodbye to choosing between the expensive brands or cheap disposables. Say hello to Harry's high quality blades at a price you'll love. Go to harrys.com right now. Enter promo code RHAP. Get $5 off your first purchase. Get a month's worth of shaving for just $10 with the promo code RHAP at checkout at harrys.com. Promo code RHAP. All right. Now, Antonio, why don't we get down to business talking about the voicemails from the week? Of course, every week we get these voicemails into us in our voicemail inbox, robhaswebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. And of course, Antonio, why don't we start off with a question that is very much on the minds of all of the listeners this week. This is a question from Costa, a.k.a. Rob's Fact Checker.
I like it.
Hey guys, it's Costa calling, a.k.a. Rob's Fact Checker. In the preview for next week's episode, we saw a glimpse of the immunity challenge with blindfolded players smashing into each other while carrying huge puzzle pieces. This infamous challenge occurred in episode 4 of All Stars, in the unfortunate episode where Rob went home. Since this challenge will also be occurring in episode 4 of this season, is Steven destined to go home next week, or will he escape the fate of his know-it-all co-host? I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Love you, Bay.
Okay, love you, Bay.
Love you, Bay.
Antonio, of course, I remember it well. Episode 4 of Survivor of the All-Stars, entitled Wipeout.
Oh, boy.
Was an unfortunate wipeout between the weather and also metaphorically for my Survivor game. And this same challenge was back there at that point in time. So do you think, will Steven suffer the same fate of going out in an episode with this challenge?
You think Steven's going to sit this one out, Rob?
Oh, I don't think that they would sit him out in this challenge ultimately, because I think that he would probably be one of the people that you would need to carry the blocks. Mm-hmm. So we were in that tribe makeup that we had, you know, it was Big Tom, it was Boston Rob, and then Sue Hawk was one of the people. And I think Sue Hawk is probably stronger than me, so I think that that made sense. I don't think that the new Bion tribe is constituted the same way. I think that they would need Steven in the mix. I actually volunteered to be the caller in the tribe because I thought that I could do a good job. But, you know, what, you know, the Shapira tribe did not feel like I was in any sort of position to be speaking to people and talking about important things. They did not feel like I was qualified to have that job.
Well, that's interesting.
Yes. And so they gave that job to Alicia. I think that she had been the caller in the blindfold challenge in Australia, which they won. And in fairness, they actually did a good job. They actually screwed up on the puzzle. The Shapira tribe, they did a good job of getting through the blindfold portion of things. So I'm not sure exactly where Steven would be, but I think that they would need him carrying. I mean, his nickname is Big Steve. I think they need him out in the mix.
Well, and we've got, I mean, you've got Monica, you've got Kimmy, you've got Kelly, Spencer, and Jeremy, right? So I think Jeremy is a guy that you want, carrying pieces, but he's also a guy who can be pretty loud. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of an authoritative guy. He works with teams. He's a fireman. He knows kind of how to handle people. So I think that it would make sense to have Jeremy as a caller. And if you do that, you really have to have Steven out there carrying pieces. But I don't know. It's interesting. How I haven't heard Alicia's podcast recently. Is it any good?
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. The only reason I ask about Steven sitting outside of the obvious connection to All Stars is you and Josh, especially on the Survivor Know-It-Alls, have been talking about how there's this weird kind of thing that's developing with Steven in these challenges where he is kind of taking a little bit of a backseat, it seems. He's slow playing it or playing it very coy, not jumping in and putting his neck out there on the line for the puzzles. Granted, he's been on a tribe with Joe a lot of the time, so it's a lot easier for him to not stick his neck out because Joe is a great person to do what he's doing. But now that he's kind of in this, there's nowhere to hide in these six-person tribes that you've talked about. So he probably is going to have to step up and take action on this tribe. And, you know, I don't know how this is all going to break down now that we've got two tribes of six and one tribe of five. If we're going to have a sit out, I assume they would probably sit out Monica, but then that means she can't play in the immunity challenge. So and that means she has to play in the immunity challenge, I should say. So,
well, we don't know if that's the reward or that's the immunity. I would imagine that this challenge is going to be for immunity.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Sorry about that. So that's probably true. So maybe she will have sat out of a reward challenge already, or maybe somebody else will. We'll see how that plays out. But I think Steven will be involved in this challenge. Steven's game. Steven's trying hard. There's a great GIF going around the internet, you know, after Andrew Savage questioned everything about Fishbach, of Steven running up that ramp, just running, dashing up the ramp, and Savage trying to do the same thing and falling down and not making it up there. So Steven has
a PR firm got that out?
Stephen, he direct messaged me on Twitter and told me to say that. No, he did not. He did not. But yeah, Stephen is, other than his coconut chopping and his branch, I think of non-chopping related physical things, Stephen seems to be doing fine.
In terms of this challenge coming up for next week, I feel that they have the perfect caller in-house. And I think that that would be Kimmy Kappenberg. I think that you have her. I think she is an ideal caller. I feel like that this is her skill set that she was put on this earth to have, which is shout stuff loudly. I think that she is the perfect person to be the caller. And then I think you have, you know, Steve. And I don't know, because it's only going to be one sit out. I don't know. Will you send four people out to go and pick up the puzzle pieces? That I'm not sure about. But I feel like Steve and Spencer and Jeremy would be your ideal team. But Kelly Wigglesworth, I'm sure, can carry some heavy stuff as well, but I think that you would probably want Steven out there more so than Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yeah, I think so too. And you're right about Kimmy being a hilarious caller. That'd be pretty funny, especially if there's a lot of disagreement there. There's a good potential for a shouting match to develop. I don't know that we'll see it. We have seen that a little bit at these challenges, but I'm not sure we'll see it from Kimmy, but that would be pretty good. And Kimmy has been under the radar, so it'll be nice to see her in a role like that.
Oh, this don't suck at all.
Yeah. So good for Kimmy.
Yeah. Step up, Kimmy. We got it.
So let's start to take a look at how the game is going to progress now that we have these new tribes. And at what point will it just be a battle of Bayon versus Takeo? And at what point will people maybe start to feel some sort of loyalty or allegiance to these new groups that they're in here in the middle of the game? So let's take a question about this. And this is from Brian.
Hey, Rob, this is Brian Offshall from New Jersey. It seems to me that the show has really pushed the story of the original tribes being divided into a 4-2, 4-2, 2-4 configuration after the swap, and that they were all going to stay loyal to their original tribe. On a traditional season, this might make sense, since no one will know each other before the game. On this season, most of them know each other, most of them have talked pregame, and even if they didn't, they all have a sense of who each of them are as a person. So does this narrative really even make sense on this season, or is Survivor just trying to paint a picture in a more traditional way? Thanks, guys. Great seeing you last week, Rob. The Live Know-It-Alls was a fantastic time, and can't wait for the next one. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, Antonio. So much was made out of the 4-2, 4-2, 2-4 split in these tribes, and do you think that that's going to hold? I mean, these are people who have all this time outside of the game. There was all this campaigning and pre-gaming and all sorts of stuff. Then they end up on these same tribes for 7 days. And again, Survivor time is much longer than real time, or at least it feels like it. You know, time is a flat circle. I don't know what shape it is on Survivor. But Antonio, these people were together for 7 days. How bonded are these people who spent these first 7 days of the game together? And do you think that we will see people start to really just go with what's working as opposed to where they were before the tribe swap?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of go with what's working. We saw that last night. The four did not stick together. The two that were on the bottom were able to expose the cracks within that four very quickly and take them apart. Now, granted, that was probably one of the softer groups of four that there was out there because there was already the existing kind of division between Abby and PG over Bracelet Gate and everything that happened there. But and then, of course, the insults that came on the beach or whatever. But yeah, I think that you're going to see that break up. I mean, if you look at Takeo, for example, the people that were on the original Bayon tribe that are on Takeo now are what? Joe, Cass. I think you've got Keith on there. And so there, I'm trying to remember who the fourth is. Sierra. So I'm not sure that we saw anything, from the first two episodes to indicate that Joe, Cass, Keith, and Sierra as a four were super close. These tribes didn't go to tribal council. This is the whole intentional Matt Singh kind of thing coming into play, where these tribes haven't had to really expose their divisions and haven't had to really strengthen their bonds. So this is the perfect time, I think, if you're in one of the twos, to kind of get in a different position. And the other thing, I wanted to talk to you about this, Rob, because it just seems like it's kind of fallen by the wayside here as we get into the third week. These pregame alliances, I just don't know to what extent that even comes into play anymore. That was sort of out the window the moment we hit the beach with what went on with Jeff Varner. And everything that went on with the beach people versus the shelter people and the pregame alliances there. So I'm wondering if that plays a part in the 4-2 at all, It's a lot harder, obviously, to show that on TV. But I think you're looking at an All-Stars type season. Almost in every case, the people that are in the two are, I think, capable players who can make some moves and who aren't going to just accept their fate. We saw great examples of that last night, but I think it's going to shake up pretty quickly.
It's so funny because we do have these three things. We have who was aligned in the pregame, who was talking before the show started, and who was working with who. Then we have these two original tribes, Intakeo and Bayon. And then we have now these three new configurations. And it'll be interesting to see what ultimately holds. It seems like for now, what's holding is not necessarily where they are now, but where they were in the first place, which is going to be fun to see how long is that going to go. If they spend maybe the next 10 days in these new groups, are they still going to say, well, it's 4-2? I think that if we have like 2 or 3 episodes, I think that you're going to see some of those lines start to get muddied. So I think that that's going to be very fun. But I have the next question sort of ties into this. So let me jump into playing this one from Matt Forsyth, and we're going to stick with this idea of these tribal lines.
Hey, what's up? Matthew Forsyth here. So, after last night's tribal council, it kind of seems like Bayon is in control of all three tribes. And so, what I want to know is, do you all think that this is going to be a Bayon-dominated season? And if you're someone from the old Takeo, how do you adjust your game knowing that there's probably going to be a lot of Bayon people at the merge? Thanks. Bye.
Okay, so this is interesting to me because we've seen three people go out of this game, and they're all three people that were from the original Takeo tribe. Now we're talking about that. We don't think these tribal lines are going to hold up in these new groups of six. They were only together for 7 days. But Antonio, when we look at it this way, where if the Bayon tribe was this love tribe where they felt like they had a good thing going and everybody there, with the exception of maybe Stephen Fishback, feels pretty good about that situation, do you think that we are going to have a situation where all of the Bayon people are going to say, wait, it doesn't make any sense for me to go with Takeo. They don't have the numbers. So if I defect from Bayon and go and work with any of these Takeo people, then I am going to be picked off once these tribes come back together, because the only place in the entire game where Takeo had an advantage was here at this Angkor tribe, where it was 4 Takeo and only 2 people, and still Bayon won out there. So at these other tribes where we have that it's only Terry and Kelly Wentworth on this one tribe at the new Takeo, you see Kelly trying to throw Terry under the bus as much as she can because she doesn't want to get picked off. So she's willing to screw Terry over in that scenario. And Terry, for as much as that Terry is bragging about having a social game, he's not exactly seeing that just yet, but Terry does have a social game.
Terry Deeds has the social game.
I just did the cauldron stirring with my hands.
Yeah, stir the pot.
I'm stirring the pot out.
I guess that while we're here, why don't we give Kelly throwing Terry under the bus.
Go under that bus, Terry. Go, go. Oh, my God.
And then meanwhile, at the new Bayon tribe, I mean, do you think that Spencer and Kelly Wigglesworth are going to be a tight two? I mean, both of them are going to be trying to throw each other under the bus once they get to that, if they have to go to a tribal council. So Takeo, to me, is in shambles.
Yeah, what's interesting about this, and this is part of Matthew's question, is how do the players adjust their game to try to deal with this? We saw it last night. Jeff Varner appeared to sort of get too cute with this, where it seemed like his design may have been telling Kelly Wigglesworth exactly who she should work with on her tribe. And I think there was even some discussion of throwing the challenge last night so that they could get rid of Andrew Savage and Tasha and then reset the tribe numbers. So Takeo and Bayon original would be equaled out 2-2. And that's kind of where Jeff's head was at. And so the players are thinking about this, but their thinking about it is getting them into trouble. And maybe the strategy isn't the Terry Deeds strategy, where he's talking about having a social game. But another one of his confessionals, he talked about how, well, my strategy is I don't think we're going to lose a challenge. So I think we're just going to be able to coast. And, you know, we don't really have the numbers, but I don't think it's going to matter. So his is kind of out of sight, out of mind. Let's focus on winning and we'll be fine. And he made the call, and we'll see if this ends up being true, that he doesn't think they'll lose a challenge. It's entirely possible with the three-tribe format that they won't. One of the things that probably will happen in this season, though, is you talked about last night the tribal mitosis, the splitting of the tribes,
yes,
right? Do you think we're going to have a tribal? Was it is the opposite of mitosis meiosis? Am I right about that?
That's above my pay grade, so I don't exactly know. I do think we'll go back down to two tribes at some point. At the traditional, say 14, go to two tribes of seven. I think that makes the most sense.
Right. And so if we do that, there is a possibility, depending on how things play out, that there could be a slight numbers advantage for a Takeo, a reformed Takeo tribe with some original Takeo members, depending on who gets eliminated, obviously, over the next couple of weeks and how that plays out. So there's always a chance the numbers will shift as they go to two. If they do break down and shrink into two tribes before the merge, there is the chance that you're going to have a weird kind of numbers situation there, because if you're doing two tribes of seven, you'll have a 4 and 3. So all you need is 4 Takeo people on one tribe that are tied at that point, and then they can pick people off before the merge. So there's a lot of game left to be played, but it's interesting, I think, Matthew's question, seeing what people are doing, sort of anticipating this very thing, is in fact what got Jeff into trouble, that he's trying to communicate with someone on another tribe who is his ally, who he said is a person he cares about, and telling her what to do. And it seemed like he said Kimmy and Monica, and it'll be us four, is what I think he said. So I think he was basically saying, like, we can work this. You just got to stay tight with them and work on that. And so that's interesting to me, because Jeff's basically telling Kelly, hey, force a tie. You've got three right there with those two. If you can get a tie going, that's fine. But he's not interested in any kind of tie scenario that isn't a neon green tie with a Fred Flintstone shirt.
Yeah, I do think that this was a troubling development after what happened at Angkor last night, where Takeo just could not even keep their act together in that group of four that they have, because I think that it's a sign to all the other tribes, if they go to tribal council, vote out a Takeo person, vote out a Takeo person. It seems like Bion has their stuff together. It's almost like that this is like taking on like a fans versus favorite season. And I wonder if we are going to have a pagonging of the entire Takeo tribe with maybe just like a few of these stragglers, like a fans versus favorite season where Sherry is left around for a while and, you know, an Eddie or something like that. Or in the original fans versus favorites, like a Reichenbach, or, you know, Natalie Bolton is still there at the end with a bunch of the favorites. Do you think that that is a realistic possibility? Do you think that we could potentially get into a merge with, say, like 9 Bion people and only 3 Takeos?
I think that could happen. I mean, I think that we're going to probably lose 2. If Angkor goes to tribal council twice, they're going to lose 2, I would say, Takeo. I mean, I think Jeff could find an idol. Jeff could get his really work his game and get back on and say to Savage and Tasha, like, do you really want to work with Abby? Like, you saw how quickly she ran away from us. She's going to run away from you just as quickly. Like, at least with me, you can predict what's going on. I didn't stab you in the back. We weren't together. We were on different tribes. We had just come together. So I don't know. Maybe he can work it, but he seems to be persona non grata right now. And I'd say the same for Wu. Wu was in the minority there in the 2 votes. So I think it's trouble for Wu as well. Savage seems to be so focused on keeping the tribe strong. So if they lose again, it wouldn't surprise me to see Jeff Varner right there in the hot seat, which is unfortunate. And then Wu would be next, and then you'd be down to 3. So I think you lose 2 Takeo right there. I'm less convinced that Kelly or Terry would have a serious problem. Kelly's got some game. She also has an idol. I don't think Terry's the person that you would probably target just because he's Takeo, because I think they're going to want to keep their tribe strong. So that part at least is interesting. I just don't know where that leaves Kelly Wigglesworth and Spencer. I think that they're in a little more difficult spot. We are getting a gameplay edit on Spencer. We're getting some, like, he's trying to make inroads with Jeremy. We saw that. So maybe we're getting that edit because inroads will be made and something will happen. I don't know. But I think we could lose 2 very easily from Angkor. And then I think it's pretty simple to see that somebody, Spencer or Kimmy, could go for sure. But that would require Angkor actually winning a challenge, which I don't see happening.
And to me, I do think that there's probably a little bit of fear for these other groups, for the new Bion and Takeo without Andrew. I think that there is going to be a sense of, if we don't vote off a Takeo person, Andrew is going to be mad at us. And we are going to be out of the bigger Bion group when it comes back together.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's true. It's interesting because you also have to look back at, speaking of Andrew and where people's heads are at, I don't see Jeremy being afraid of Andrew, but I see Jeremy as his strategy going into the game was, keep bigger targets around, keep the alpha males around, keep the people around that can take some heat off of you so that you're not perceived as the biggest threat. And certainly that doesn't bode well if he has to pick between Kelly and Spencer. He's probably keeping Spencer in that scenario. But maybe in that scenario, what happens is if Bion were to somehow lose, he looks at a different person as a possible evictee. Like maybe he looks at Kimmy, or maybe he looks at Monica, because ultimately they don't serve what his grander plan was, and he's comfortable with the numbers Bion would have regardless. So I don't know. I don't know that other people like Jeremy are going to be afraid of Savage or Savage's wrath. I think that you know, you have to think back to what their strategy was going into the game. And then there is the weird little thing about pregame alliances. I don't think Keith and Kelly Wentworth were in a pregame alliance, but I think Kelly was wanting to get rid of Keith. And I think that if that comes up, if for some reason that were to happen organically, I think that Kelly could say, look, I'm not with him. Like, if you want to vote him out, vote him out. Like, so there's going to be some malleability there that exists from the pregame that we haven't really touched on. And I'm not sure how evident it will be, but I do think some of that comes into play for sure.
Yeah. Also, one last thing on this. I also think that the Bion people are also incentivized not to rock the boat. I think they feel like, hey, I'm guaranteed a spot here at the merge as long as I stick to the plan. And that's vote out the KO people. It's almost so easy for all of these people to just say, okay, well, the easy vote is to KO. The only spot where it wasn't an easy vote was for Tasha and Andrew, and they somehow were able to figure out a way to do it. And I think that's what's going to make this maybe potentially a predictable pre-merge just based on whatever tribe is going to tribal council. I think it's going to be probably one of those two people from Takeo that's going to have the biggest target on their back now.
Yeah, I think that that's probably true. But, you know, all that needs to happen is one crazy blow up, one crazy interpersonal thing that happens as people continue to be hungrier and as people continue to kind of suffer with the conditions and not sleeping as much. Cass has been so dormant, and Cass is an original Bion, and she's on the Takeo tribe now. But who knows what Cass could do? Cass is the kind of person that could immediately act inexplicably and seemingly against her perceived interests. So even though she's been all about the love tribe and she has played a great game, really keeping a low profile so far, I don't necessarily think that we can just assume that will continue based on everyone's previous chances. There's some drama that could happen for any reason, whether it's a bag or a bracelet or a beach or something else that comes up with a B. Something could happen and things could change very quickly.
Okay, let's take a question from the great Austin from Australia, who wants to know about PG 3.0.
Hey, Rob, this is Austin from Australia. Third time calling about third time's the charm. We saw our third castaway go home tonight, so I'm wondering, is PG going to get a third chance at Survivor? And honestly, can I say third any more times in this message? Third?
I was hoping that would happen, yeah.
Third time is the charm here for Austin, but I love this weekly question/segment to talk about this. What do you think, Antonio, for the big Survivor third time's a charm? Everybody's talking about this in terms of the Survivor community of this upcoming season that's just around the corner. Is PG somebody that you think we should expect to see back for third time's a charm?
I don't think we should expect to see PG back. I would love to see PG back, but I don't think we should expect to see it. I mean, thinking of a couple things. One, it took a really long time for her to get her second chance. And when she did, she wasn't bad, but she didn't. I mean, it's not like she's giving the Jeff Varner kind of second chance where she's giving them such television that I think that they would have her back instantly based solely on what we've seen so far. She definitely played a better game in her first game in China. But of course she did. I mean, she's out third this time, so she definitely played a better game then. But a lot of the problems that she had last night were kind of her own making. Like she sided with Abby a couple times when she didn't want to, and she kind of went against her gut in that respect. And then that came back to bite her. And then last night, rather than kind of say anybody but me, and we can get rid of Jeff, she planted a flag and said, I want to get rid of Abby. And that was ultimately what led her out the door. So I do think that that was of her own doing. That is gameplay. It's not like she got voted out because she was just weak or wasn't doing anything. She was trying. But I'm not sure, because of how long it took her to get her second chance, that anything happened we saw with PG this time that would lead to her getting a third chance. I don't know. I'd love to see it, but I'm not too optimistic about it. What about you?
I would be surprised if we saw it. I think that PG, I don't know if there was the compelling enough story from the first time. I know people really love PG and it was fun to see her back, but I don't know if that there's a big unanswered question about her. And I think that going back to last week, I think Shireen is probably more likely of the two, because I think that probably that we say with Shireen, well, what if she got some distance? Like, I don't know what the what if is about PG. I feel like with Shireen, I think there's still a bit of a what if about her, but I'm not sure if that there is a what if question to explore with PG on the third time around.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think you'd have to look at what your desired theme of a third chance season would be. And if your theme of a third chance season is they had a second chance, they made one big mistake that blew their game up on their second chance, and you know it was a really bad situation for them because of one big fatal flaw or one, you know, whatever. If you could find a way to make PG's story compelling, the PG Abby thing, there's, and especially if you're putting Abby Maria in for a third chance, then PG and R, PG is probably, as we've seen so far, at least, one of her best third chance competitors. I mean, they were at each other's throats pretty much from the beginning. And so you would have a kind of a built-in story there if that's the story you're looking to tell with Survivor, Third Time's a Charm. I don't know.
I almost feel like you're going to get that with Abby with just about any person you put her out there with.
That seems to be the case. And like I said, there's plenty of game left. I mean, so far each week has been Abby kind of should have gone home and didn't go home in many cases because of things that she was ready to do or not do. So I it will be interesting. You're right. Like anybody that she really gets involved with is probably going to have an Abby story. So that could be something for PG, but it could be for anyone else that is going to be on this season. So yeah, you're right. I don't know that there's a compelling story there, but like I said, I don't think her game, I think she's a better player than what we saw this time around. And so if that's the narrative for Third Time's a Charm, like I had a second chance and I blew it. There is a story for her there.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad at it if it happened, but I think we're trying to find the people who are almost like the Tyson model for Third Time's a Charm, where they played the first time. And even if something went bad the second time, it went spectacularly bad the second time, that we kind of want to see them back again. And for PG, I think that while there was conflict there, I don't think that things totally blew up in her face. It was sort of like she just could not get on the same page with Abby Maria. I don't know if there's enough of a story there for PG 3.0.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Okay. Let's take another question from Jonathan from Orlando, who wants to talk about everybody's favorite. Let's talk about Joe.
Joe.
Hey, Robin, Antonio. This is Jonathan from Orlando. Do you guys think that there is a big enough sample at this point to put Joe at the top of the list of all-time challenge beasts? There's no denying that he's one of the best physical competitors ever, and at this point, he might be one of, if not the best puzzle solver we've ever seen. And to this point, do you think Joe's going to be the obvious first boot at the merge if he makes it that far? Love to know what you guys think. Bye.
All right, let's take this in two parts. Let's talk about Joe. Is Joe the ultimate challenge competitor of all time?
He's perfect.
I mean, was that Savage's daughter there? I couldn't tell.
All I could think about was Joe's body.
Yes.
Of work. Joe's body of work.
Joe's body of work. About. Right.
Yes. As each week goes by, I'm more and more impressed with Joe. And just when I think I can't be more impressed with him, just when he's inventing hammocks and doing crazy stuff like that, making a very credible fake idol his first season, just leading the team in Joga, whatever he's doing, he crushed that puzzle this week. Like he is just the man is both physically and really good. I mean, the fact that he's a jewelry designer means I think he's really good at the intricate kind of visualizations of these puzzles. Last week, the puzzle we saw, Spencer and Shireen put it together. They just put it together slightly incorrectly. And what happened was Joe realized it was incorrect a lot earlier and fixed it and made it work. And this is a guy who can think visually and be physical like that. I mean, Boston Rob, pretty good though, right? Like Boston Rob, very good at puzzles and no slouch physically in competitions whatsoever. He didn't have like individual immunity runs or threats like you, I think Joe is perceived to be, but old BR, Boston God, pretty darn good on the competitions.
This is a tough question to answer because we have the resume and then we have sort of like the prototype of the person.
The Joe-ta-type,
where Joe on paper has the ability to be potentially the greatest Survivor Challenge competitor of all time, because he is the guy who can do it all. He can run, he can swim, plus he can do the puzzle, where it's sort of like for Ozzy, where he goes through and he can swim and he can do all the things that Joe can do physically. When it comes down to it in Survivor South Pacific at the Final Four, all Ozzy has to do is put together a puzzle to win the game, and Sophie's able to beat him. And I'm sure Sophie is incredible at doing the puzzles, but it doesn't look like Ozzy is really even that close to putting the puzzle together. And so Joe, it seems like, has everything that Ozzy can do, plus he can also do the puzzles. And it looks like if we're just going to go by what Joe can do, he is seeming like he is better than even, say, like a Boston Rob, Circa, Survivor All-Stars, and Colby. Again, I think that that might have been a case of versus some weak competition and some of these other people. I mean, if you go back and take a look at it, Mike Holloway won 5 immunity challenges last season, but Joe was the only person that was beating him in these challenges. So I think that Joe has the upside to be the best challenge competitor of all time, but he just does not yet, in my mind, have the resume or the body of work.
All I could think about was Joe's body.
Of work.
Of work. Yeah, that's right. And I think that that's true. It's and the other thing is, he didn't win the individual immunity when he really needed to the most, at a time when he was a target. And so I think winning challenges when you really need to also matters. And I think that that's something that the jury was out on Joe, because he lost that individual immunity and he was obviously a target. And that was that for Joe. So sometimes you have to win when the chips are down and you need to buy yourself another 3 days and find an idol or work your way back in or start chaos or get something going in those 3 days you buy yourself, even if you are a threat. And he didn't do that on his first season. So you're right. The body of work is not there. And he had the opportunity to make that body of work better and he didn't. That said, when you got a guy who can swim very well and he can solve the puzzles the way he does, he's a pretty beastly guy. Like he's such an obvious target though, that he's got to do more than just win challenges all the time.
So what does Joe do to not be the first person voted out at the merge?
I mean, it's a really difficult position. First of all, I think he has to find a really solid close alliance that can do a little bit of work for him. In other words, that he's not so obviously out there playing a social game and playing so desperate that he's maybe got some other people who have their ears to the ground that can work with him to protect their group. And I think he also needs to puff up other people as serious threats one way or another. Like if you don't vote out so-and-so, then the numbers are not going to be in your favor and this could happen, et cetera, et cetera. So he's got to really think longer term and be able to make that pitch anytime it comes up and really be thinking about, like, in each person's kind of win condition, like, hey, if you vote me out right here, what you're losing is an ally who X, Y, and Z. And, you know, it's just going to mean that you're going to be out of the game sooner. So he's got to really have a pitch for each person to give them. And then he's only got to sway enough.
Does that work? Because I kind of feel like the argument of logic for most survivors tends to be an ineffective one. I mean, go back to last week where Shireen was talking to Wu and she sort of lays out the case. Wu, I'm telling you, if you don't vote with me, here's what's going to happen. You're going to be fine until the merge and then you're going to get voted out because you're one of the most threatening people in the game and these people are going to come after you. And she's like, you know, lays it out plainly for everybody. And Wu is like, whoa, how dare you? How dare you, Shireen?
The biggest problem with that was that that was the first thing she'd said to him, that they hadn't really had an established relationship where then she could talk to him about game and he wouldn't think of it as anything other than what it was, which is just a naked ploy to make a better play in the game. Joe's got to be able to, and he's doing this, it seems like, really forge relationships with people such that when he makes that pitch, it's not an abrasive kind of thing. And I think that the story of Shireen, of course, is that she didn't do enough with people her second time around. And I think that that's told not only with her not coming to Abby's defense, at least that we saw, but also with the fact that Wu, of all people, Wu is upset and offended and saying, this is the first time you've talked to me. Like, this is like, no, like, I don't, there's no honor in that. Like, the first time I got my first black belt was more honorable. Like, he's not happy about that, not because she's presenting him with logic, but because she's presenting him with logic in a way that he sees as simply manipulative instead of simply logical. Logic is not always going to work. But I think that you have to have that, because I think that that opens a ton of doors for people when the recipient is ready to receive that message. So I think that the biggest thing Joe can do is manage relationships, get tight with people, understand that, you know, he's a loyal guy. That's one thing you can say about Joe. He doesn't have any kind of reputation as somebody that's backstabby. He's always going to be a bigger target. Like, it's an easy pitch to Jeremy, right? Like, hey, don't you want to keep me around? Like, I'm always going to be a bigger target than you. So yeah, cut me at 6, cut me at 5. The thing that's difficult for Joe is Joe can't say, what am I going to do? Win 6 immunity challenges in a row? That's never happened, right? Because we've not 6, but I mean, we've seen it just happen.
5 out of 6.
So, yeah, 5 out of 6. Like, we've seen it just happen. So it's not an easy pitch for Joe to be like, I'm not going to go on some crazy run. That could never happen. So if I'm Joe, I'm being like, hey, listen, I lost individual immunity challenges on my season. I'm not going to win every one of them. Not all of these are geared to a guy like me. And at some point, you're going to have the ability to take me out. Like, let's get each other further in the game. Let the chips fall where they may.
Okay. And so for Joe, I think it also really behooves him to keep on with this buy-on forever. Like, let this buy-on group get to the merge. And then this buy-on 5, which is Andrew and Keith and Jeremy and Tasha and who's the other person?
It'll be Joe.
And Joe?
Yeah. 5th, yeah.
Okay, so if that group can stay together, and then, you know, if Andrew's like, hey, if anybody goes against this group, then they're the next one to go. Like, that could be the best scenario possible for Joe.
Yeah, let buy-ons be buy-ons.
Let buy-ons be buy-ons. And keep on buy-on what Andrew Savage is selling.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Let's take this question about Abby Maria from Chris.
Oh, boy.
Hey, Rob, it's Chris from Mississippi again. My question today is, should we start buying into the F with me and your dad system that Abby Maria has? If you look at the first 3 people that have gone home, Vetus literally rubbed her the wrong way. Sharon didn't get her back, and we all know the issues that she and PG had. So should we start buying into this?
All right. What do you think about this? We talk about all these different players with their, you know, their strategy and their manifesto of this is what this person is all about. Is Abby officially the if you F with me, you are dead strategy?
With me, you're dead.
I mean, Vetus had her back the wrong way. Shireen didn't have her back at all. Like, PG has been rated R with Abby from the beginning. Like, I do think that there are, like, people should know better than to get on the wrong side of Abby Maria. That said, how do you get on the right side of Abby Maria? Like, how do you do this? Because PG, I heard in your exit interview with her today, Rob, she said she wished she'd stroked Abby Maria's ego a little bit more. But we literally saw Jeff Varner doing that last week. He was on the beach. It was dawn. He was kind of fanning himself off with a towel, and he's saying, Terry's such a nice guy. I think I'm going to align with him. And Abby's like, me too. And then they were, you know, he was telling her, I like you. You know, your little outburst turned me on, or whatever he said.
Yeah.
And he's literally stroking your ego. And then this week, she's like, I'm sick of Jeff. I want him out. And she's immediately moved with Savage and Tasha after Jeff had stroked her ego. So anything can set Abby off. We're talking about a person who took offense because someone said she was dry in a shelter. Like, this, anything can make Abby angry. Like, what do you mean by that? I'm dry? What are you saying? Like, come on,
if you say
Abby,
I am dry, you're dead.
You're dead. You're dead. You're no such thing as a dry dragon. Like, no. So I don't think there is any way to deal with Abby Maria. Like, and I think so far
we've seen. How do you solve a problem like Abby Maria?
How do you make her stay and listen to all you say? It's impossible. Like, I just don't see it happening. So I mean, I don't know where we go with this with Abby Maria. To be perfectly candid, she's, I guess you could say she's good television. I'm not so happy that she's on this season. I'd rather see in a Survivor All-Stars type scenario, I'd rather see people play a little bit different game than what she's playing. But it certainly, as far as Survivor goes, sometimes the pre-merge can be a very kind of doldrums time and a boring thing. And you certainly can't say that about this season with Abby.
It's been so fascinating for me to watch because I think coming into this season, I think we looked at this cast. And I think Stephen Fishback had said 17 out of the 20 people in this season could win. This is a season that is not a season that's really, you know, five people, six people can win. He says 17 people can legitimately win this season. And I don't disagree with that. I don't know if it's exactly 17, but it's a very large percentage of people are here to play. There's not too many wackos in this season, but we do have this one person who can go off at the drop of a hat in Abby Maria. And I think you have so many people in this season, everybody's playing their cards close to the vest. This isn't anybody's first rodeo. Everybody's playing a really strong game this time around, except there's one person who is willing to not hold their cards close to the vest. There's one person who's going to explode. So at the point where anybody has conflict with this one person, it's almost like the other players are piling on that, because I think there's so many people that are also sort of on board with the anybody but me. And so it's sort of like as soon as Abby Maria gets into the conflict with somebody, I think that you're seeing the other players say, okay, well, let's all go after this person that Abby Maria is fighting with, because it's a good reason as any to go after somebody. And so there almost is like some teeth behind that. If you F with me, you are dead in this game.
Yeah, and not necessarily because she'll kill you, but because other people will recognize that this is an easy way to avoid kind of some kind of line drawing, right? That you can just jump on, like you said.
And her vote is up for grabs.
Yeah, it's hilarious because she even had a confessional last night where she said that Jeff Varner needed to go because he was unpredictable. She said that. She had the freaking gall to say that someone else needed to go because they were unpredictable. And I think that that's hilarious. But maybe it's what you're saying. Maybe it's that her unpredictability is totally predictable. Like the fact that she is unreliable is reliable. Like, you know that she's going to get a beef with somebody. And even though we know that this isn't what happened, it almost seemed like Jeff Varner went back to the shelter after the challenge and just took a nap and waited for Abby to blow up on somebody. And that's not what happened. Apparently he did game and work himself, according to PG and Jeff and others. But that's what we saw in the episode, is Jeff sleeping while Abby blew up at PG, and that was it. So it's just like, you know, sit around and wait for her to blow up. Something will happen, and then just pile on that and work your way out of it.
And I don't think it's a coincidence where, if we go back to the last time Survivor had a pure all-star season, we had Sandra win, and Sandra won on her second time around. But to me, Abby Maria is almost like Sandra, I was going to say on steroids, not because she is necessarily a better version of Sandra, but she is sort of like an ill-tempered Sandra, where Sandra can get loud too, but Abby Maria can get even louder than Sandra. So it's almost like that she's like a crankier Sandra. And
yeah.
And while Sandra was very effective at what she did, where anybody but me, where Abby Maria is clearly not saying anybody but me, Abby Maria is saying, no, this person, this one, this is the one that I want. And everybody else is like, okay, that sounds good to us. Let's all pile on this, because at least that's one vote in this direction. And Abby Maria's vote there. There's some similarities, I think, in the approach.
Yeah, there are. And where it differs, of course, is I think we got a great example of this last night, is that when Jeff Varner needed a vote to keep their number strong within the 4-2, he had to count on Abby and not Vetus or Shireen, because they had gone and done what Abby wanted to do, or what Abby was on board with the first two votes. And instead of voting Abby out first, like Vetus wanted to do, or instead of voting Abby out last week, which would have been an easy sell for the group at large, Jeff Varner was plotting with Abby, and Abby was, you know, doing good work the first couple of weeks in terms of being ahead of the vote. But because she's still in the game, because he effed with her in that way, in the biblical sense, because he lied down with her and aligned with her, he's now in a position where he's drawing dead, because he's drawing dead because he has to deal with somebody who's that unpredictable and who immediately runs away from him at a moment's notice. So, you know, it's one way or another. Like, either you play with Abby Maria and eventually it bites you for relying on her, or you don't play with her and it bites you for not playing with her. And that's crazy to think about. Like, if she gets a third chance, she's got to go first. Like, there's no question she has to go first.
She almost did this time.
but somebody else might keep her around, or somebody might make a move and say, I'll keep Abby around because she'll stir up the drama. As long as it never points back to me, that'll be fine. But I think Jeff thought he could control Abby. And I think Jeff thought he had Abby in his pocket and he could work her. And that just ended up not being true, patently false. And it really worked against them. And Shireen was counting on Abby. Same thing. Hurt her big time. So I think that if you F with Abby one way or the other, you're dead.
Yeah, you cannot control her. There is no person who is the lion tamer yet that we have seen.
How do you hold a moonbeam in your hand, Rob?
I don't know. Let's take a question from our good buddy, Pod Vader.
Hi, Rob. Pod Vader here. I've got a question for you. Now, it appears that Varner is keeping Abby around as his shield. But couldn't you say that Abby is really keeping Varner around as a shield for herself? I think Varner is set up in a bad position, kind of like Jeremy Hill 90210.
How dare you?
Oh, boy.
Just a thought. Also, do you think our buddy Fishback is set up with a nice rappy alliance with the young lad and Jeremy? Do you think they can outlast if a merge happens? Just a couple of thoughts there. Talk to you soon. Love you, Bay.
Hey, love you, Bye. Bay.
Love you, Bay.
Love you, Vader. All right, that's Pod Vader, Blog Talk Radio.
Pod Vader.
Yes. All right, real quick, Pod Vader taking a shot at my fantasy team in the 20-team league. I've been decimated by the Tony Romo injury. Has really hurt me, but I'm not quite out of it yet. I'm in a bad spot, but we'll see. All right, in terms of Abby Maria, do you think that she's keeping Jeff Varner as a shield? Is that possible?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that it makes sense to me why Savage and Tasha picked Abby over PG, because I'm sure they felt better about being able to work with Abby against whoever else was left after this vote out than they would with PG. I think that Savage tried to work PG against Varner, and he realized that was a little bit of a non-starter, that she more wanted to get Abby out, that she really wasn't that into getting Jeff out, and I think that spelled her doom, as she indicated. So I think I know why they wanted to keep and work with Abby, but I'm not sure why Abby wanted to go against Varner. I think that Abby was on board with getting Varner out, as she told Tasha, I'll vote for him. I'm ready to get him out of here. He's too unpredictable. We even saw her telling the camera that, not just another player. So I think that there were points where she did want Jeff Varner out. As of right now, though, I think they were able to manipulate her a little bit and say, you hate PG, this is an easy deal. Going forward, though, I still think that Varner's in a really bad spot, and I do agree with Pod Vader there that he's not very well set up, because I don't think Abby's that interested in keeping him around for a shield. I don't think Abby's playing that kind of next level game. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't see that. I don't know. What do you think?
I think Varner is in an incredibly dangerous spot right now, because he's on this sort of a buffoon tribe of Angkor, where they're probably going to be back at Tribal Council. And what are they going to do? Are they going to be voting out the swing vote in Abby Maria? That might be what Jeff is trying to sell. But his only other Takeo ally is Wu. And really, PG seemed like the conduit to Wu. It seems like Wu is not crazy about Jeff Varner, based on what PG was saying in her exit interview with me, and also based on what we saw at the mat, where when Andrew Savage was talking about how, like, hey, I thought you were how to deal with me. And Wu was like, whoa, how come you didn't try to make a deal with me, Jeff?
Come on.
I'm always the last one. I get the last word all the time around here. And so he did not seem like he was loving Jeff either. So I feel like that is an easy sell for Tasha to go back and say, hey, Woo, my buddy, remember I voted for you in the final Tribal Council? Why don't you come on with us? We've got a spot for you at Bion. Stick around with Abby Maria. And then also, although Abby Maria doesn't like Woo, so then that's the thing, where if they start to bring Woo in with open arms, Jeff could be like, Abby, I'm telling you, Woo, he voted for you again. Are you really going to keep him around? He's like, I know.
Yeah, I know. I do think Jeff can work his way back in. I hope he's in it. I hope he's, I'm not happy that we didn't see him gaming his way back in last night. That doesn't bode well, I don't think, that wasn't shown in the edit. But I do think that he can work his way back in here. I think that, you know, because Abby is crazy, and because, at least in Survivor, I don't want to say she's a crazy person. My understanding is outside the game, she's perfectly pleasant. I've always liked her kind of outside the game, but within the game, she is totally unpredictable. But like I said, she's predictably unpredictable. So Jeff ought to know he can go to her with that woo thing, like you're saying, and work that, you know, maybe work that into something. I don't know. That's two votes right there. Yeah. And then maybe Savage and Tasha, all they're probably doing right now is, hey, anybody but me, as long as we're safe and we're letting these people who were on an original tribe fight amongst themselves, doesn't really matter which of them we take out. We're dwindling their numbers one at a time from a position of minority. So let's, you know, if they want to do this, let's do it. That's fine. So I think we could see that. I think Tasha is playing a great game, especially this week. I think she did a fantastic job. Abby even gave her credit and said she whispered sweet nothings in my ear, and that made it happen. I don't know. That was great. So good for Tasha. And I think that will continue. So if Jeff's head's in it, I think he can pull himself out. But you're right, very dangerous.
He's just sort of boxed in a bad spot where if he wants to get rid of Abby Maria, they'll tell Abby Maria, hey, Jeff wants to get rid of you. And then she'll vote with Savage and with Tasha. If he wants to get rid of Wu, there's no way Andrew Savage gets on board with voting out somebody who's a physical threat, unless Savage somehow buys into that, hey, this is one of the biggest threats to win immunity for the Takeo side. And maybe there's a chance they could sell that. But I believe that Andrew is very much in terms of, let me think about how we can win the challenges. He's not thinking in that way. I think he's going to try to, you know, win, and avoid tribal council. I mean, if then Jeff tries to get to go back with them, I think that they're going to say, well, why are we keeping you around? You're one of the ringleaders at the KO. So I just think that no matter which way he goes, I mean, this could be potentially checkmate for him if they have to go to another tribal council. There's no other scenario that really makes sense. Whereas voting out Jeff could potentially make sense to both Wu and Abby Maria.
Yeah, although it is interesting that he was in the four and not the two last night. So they didn't choose to bring Wu, and that's because Wu and PG were tighter. But does that mean that Wu carries a grudge for being in the minority and not being told what was going on and being left out again and having to stick his neck out and vote for Abby again? I don't know. But he's probably not happy with Savage or Tasha either. And so, yeah, he probably wants Jeff out, but he probably also wants them out. So
why would he hold it against them? Like, I think Wu would say, like, okay, I understand you guys are doing what you have to do. I mean, just going back to that Cliff Robinson thing that I was talking about last night. I mean, after the Cliff Robinson thing happened, Wu was right on board, like, okay, we're a tribe. It's us against them now. Like, he was very quick to jump in line with the people that were the majority. So I think that he's going to read the writing on the wall and get on board with Savage. And I think that he seems like a kind of guy, he's a loyal soldier. And if he could promise his loyalty, because he is a loyal guy, to Savage, I think then, and Tasha knows that. She knows that Wu isn't going to be out there freelancing.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I will say this seems to be a little bit of a different Wu this game, and a little bit that he's playing a little bit. He was talking, we saw with Shireen last week, and he put his foot down and he wasn't open and susceptible to that pitch. I mean, we have to keep in mind the narrative of second chance for everybody is, are you going to make the same mistakes again, or are you going to play differently? Are you going to make the most of this second chance? And so maybe he wouldn't want to get in line. Last night he said, can we please just stay strong and vote those two out. Can we please just do that? He almost whined about it. So I don't know. Maybe Wu is in a position where he would jump right on board with Savage and Tasha. That would be it. Maybe he'll be upset, though, that he was yet again left out of something and not told about it. And maybe he feels like, I'm tired of being the butt of everything. I'm tired of people taking me for granted and taking advantage of me. I'm going to do something about it.
But what does he do? Where else can he go? I mean, his options are to reunite with Takeo, and I don't think that that's happening, considering Abby Maria is mad at him and he doesn't love Jeff. Or he could throw his lot in with Andrew and Bion, and I think that you could see a scenario where Andrew promises him something along the lines of, like, hey, that you and I, we're the same, we're about loyalty, we're about integrity, we're about honor, and you seem like exactly the kind of guy that I want in our group. So screw these Takeo people, let's vote them out, and you join us, and I'll take you to the merge.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most likely scenario, but I think that there are other scenarios in play. I just don't know. I mean, I don't know if he's going to do the Cliff Robinson thing, or if he's going to say, like, why did everyone lie? Because it was a blind side. Everyone told PG that they were voting for Abby. Everyone said they were voting for Abby. Wu was also blindsided. We saw the Wu blindside face. And we saw what happened,
whoa,
of course. Yeah, whoa, cowabunga, man. Like, we saw what happened after the first Wu blindside, but this is Wu's second chance. So maybe he's not going to behave the same way. We'll see.
All right. Also, Pod Vader wanted to know about the possibilities of an RHAP alliance between Steven, Spencer, and Jeremy. So do you think that potentially we would see something like that? I mean, just I think it's a funny idea, but I don't think that there's really any, you know, connective tissue other than I know that Spencer and Steven had been friendly from before the season started. I don't know if you want to say that's because of RHAP or not. I think it's probably more indirectly than directly. So I think they have that in common, but I don't think it's necessarily a causation of the podcast. Spencer and Jeremy is interesting because both of those two guys were in the Mr. Survivor finals. Boy, there's going to be so much attention on Mr. and Miss Survivor this year after. Look, all of the out of the final six people, of the people that were eligible, you know, Natalie and Tony won their seasons. They were not eligible for second chances. But four out of the six are like major players in this second chance between Jeremy, Spencer, Tasha, and Kelly Wentworth.
Yeah, yeah. And that Miss Survivor campaign especially was
testy.
Pretty testy campaign. So I don't know if it'll come into play or not. It will be very interesting kind of subplot. They're definitely not going to feature that on the show as a thing, but we know what's up. No, I don't think so. Oh. I don't, but we know what's up, Rob. We don't need him to feature it. We can read between the lines, right? Wink's as good as a nod to a blind man. So I think we could see something play out there. I think that is interesting. In my opinion, unquestionably, Stephen Fishbach's best week in terms of the edit for the first three. He felt good about his tribe. I almost feel like he felt a little too good about it. Like we saw, he was clearly on the bottom of the love tribe, of the Bayon tribe. He comes in with Bayon 4, and he feels that they're just tight as tight can be. And I'm not really sure why he feels that way if he was on the bottom before. Logically, that seems to be the case, but as you pointed out earlier, logic and Survivor don't always go hand in hand. So I feel good about him and Spencer being on the same tribe, but I don't think there's a guarantee that Steven is safe. And unfortunately, he uttered that very line last night that he feels safe for the first time. This is great. And I think that could be a very bad deal that we heard him say that. I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that he is part of a four there. Maybe Spencer can work his way in. But I mean, Spencer could work his way in at Steven's expense.
No, let me say this. If Steven goes out in this game in the next couple of weeks, I think it will be in whatever configuration comes after this.
After this.
I don't see the scenario where Kelly Wigglesworth and Spencer get on the same page and conspire at Steven's expense. Like, I just don't see where the Monica, Kelly Wigglesworth, Kimmy contingent comes together and grabs either Spencer or Jeremy to vote out Steven. I don't see that scenario unfolding. I think that Steven has a better connection. I think what you're going to see ultimately is maybe potentially Monica is the one Bayon person who becomes expendable from that group. And really, we're hardly seeing anything about her to believe that her boot is imminent. So I don't think that that's going to be the case. And I feel like what you're going to see is if Bayon goes to tribal council, I think you're going to see Spencer versus Kelly in the scramble of who's going to go home from that group.
Yeah, I think that seems the most likely. But I mean, all that really needs to happen is that Spencer could replace, if Spencer were to work his way in closer with Jeremy and Jeremy felt better about Spencer than Steven, then that would be a four with Kimmy and Monica and Jeremy and Spencer versus the four that they have. I don't sense that that's happening. I think it was great that Steven told Jeremy, like, I want to help you look for the idol, not I'm going to go look on my own and you know, have people say things about me. I want to help you look for it. Like, we're together. I want to do that. Thought that was a great line from Steven. So I don't think he's done bad work by any stretch. We're getting a story. That's my only concern, is we're getting this seeming redemption story with Spencer about how this Mr. Robot now has emotions. This is great. And I don't know where it's going to end up, but I think that we, you know, I'm tracking that, because if Spencer were to somehow work his way into Steven's place with Jeremy and Kimmy and Monica, that could be bad. Obviously, that would be bad for Steven. So that's the only thing I would be concerned about. But I think the more likely scenario is what you say, for sure. But you never know.
But you do know the story of Spencer, right?
What is the story of Spencer? Tell me. Tell me.
I mean, the story of Spencer is, you know, high highs followed by low lows.
That is right. Rob, has Spencer ever told you that he loves you?
He has not yet ever told me That he loves me, unfortunately.
Well, I can't wait to hear what Denise had to say about that. So we'll just, no spoilers, but I would like to know.
Relationship advice, yeah.
Yes, I'd like to know if there was some relationship. That's good.
She has some good stuff. In terms of, Spencer, that we've talked about how it's either sadness or euphoria for Spencer. And this week was euphoria. Right. And then, so based on what we know about Spencer, sure enough, next week will be a calamity where it looks like all hope is lost.
Oh, well, there you go. So that I forgot about that. I forgot about the binary state that Spencer exists in. So there we go.
So things are looking good. It looks like he's going to run up and kick the football right
now. Football's getting pulled away next week.
Here we go. That's right. Spencer's like, hope springs eternal for me. Yes. Yes.
Good grief.
Good All right. grief. Let's take a question from Eric from Maryland.
Hi, Rob and the Maz. This is Eric Corbridge calling from Maryland. I was just wondering if you guys picked up on the similarities between what almost happened last night and what happened way back in Survivor Australia. Jeff Varner almost got himself voted out of the game due to someone whispering something to another tribe at a challenge. How delicious would that have been, in Jeff Varner's own words? Whoop in my ass! It was me! And just a quick aside, over under on two players, how many survivors do you think the Angkor Monster is going to claim before they have the next phase of the game? All right, thanks, guys. Can't wait to listen. Talk to you later. Bye.
Is that a Return of the Jedi reference for the Angkor Monster?
It was almost a Rancor. We got the Rancor Keeper. I know that we've seen Dan Foley looking like the Rancor Keeper, I think, at one point. Shout out to Josh. But I don't know. I think that was a reference. So I don't know what that makes me. Maybe Jabba the Hutt, I guess.
No. Okay. So let's just talk about that real quick. So this is going back to in Survivor Australia, where after the first challenge, allegedly it was Tina who wanted to know after the first vote, like, so who y'all did Deb vote for? And Kimmy says, oh, it was Jeff. Yeah.
Oh, this doesn't suck at all.
Yeah. And so she said that, and then that's how the Ogacore tribe knew to stack the votes on Jeff Varner when they got to the merge in Survivor, the Australian Outback. So here we are again at another one of this sort of like crosstalk, mat chat type situations. And again, Jeff Varner almost goes home. Would that have been ironic?
It would have been. I mean, what's it in that regard? Like, I don't know. It is interesting. It wouldn't have been. It would kind of be sadly. It would be sadly coincidental, I think. Like, I don't know. Ironic would be what? Like, happening in the opposite way as to what was expected. I think that Jeff would expect that if there's crosstalk at a tribal line or at a mat situation, that would end up poorly for him. I think he would expect that.
Right.
It certainly isn't his intention. But yeah, that would be pretty poor. It would be a crazy cosmic coincidence for sure, to see that happen. And it would be poetic. It would certainly be poetic. And I think Jeff is a big fan of that. I mean, I loved the delicious kind of, wouldn't that, it just occurred to me now that Spencer and Shireen's fates were in their own hands. He may as well have been giving a monologue to a skull. He's like doing like half finger tenting, sitting there like an evil genius. I love Jeff Varner, and he's got to recognize like what a fugue state or Max Dawson on Twitter said, the only other person I know that goes into fugue states like that is Walter White. And you know, Jeff Varner claiming that he just had an out of body experience and doesn't remember what happened at that mat, but he absolutely was trying to play the game there. And you got to be real careful with that. I don't know. Does Jeff not know who Bubba is?
I'm not sure. He might have been blacked out during Survivor Vanuatu.
Oh, deep state.
If we're going to compare Jeff Varner to any character from serialized television, is he Walter White or is he Frank Underwood? Because is there anybody that, you know, does it better of like breaking the fourth wall and talking about what's happening with a Southern drawl than Frank Underwood?
Now, look, this is the alliance we put together on the first day. Yeah, I could see that breaking
now, look,
down.
Like, I'm just going to step on the pedal and hit the gas. And what just bit my ass?
I believe that what just bit your. No, never mind. I won't get into that. But
what just bit my ass?
I think that's the eternal question we're always all asking ourselves.
Would you vote for President Varner?
I would vote for President Varner, sure, in a heartbeat.
Why not? President Varner, I think I like the sound of this.
Yeah, I like the sound of that.
You know what? And isn't he always on Twitter with hashtag vote Varner?
He's already campaigning.
He's gearing up for this.
He really is. Do you think he's going to? The South Carolina is an important early primary state, Rob. Like this is, he's actually well positioned to play in the game here. This could work out really. I think last time I checked, D's Nuts was polling second in South Carolina, so it's not a very high climb for Jeff to get up the ranks here. Who's a good running mate for Jeff Varner?
Or is he like sort of trying to get in as like Hillary's running mate?
Oh well, that's true. He could be like position himself as a really good number two for somebody and just say, "I'm not interested in the top spot. You take the heat. I'm just here to support you and back you
up. I just want to make sure that y'all do well. I just want to support you. I'll carry the ticket in South Carolina."
Is a sleeveless tie look, is that something we're ready to accept?
I think so. I'm on board with this.
Let's have it happen. Look, Jeff Varner's a very informed guy. He knows about the news. He's a writer. He's a smart guy. Like, this is there have been crazier things that have happened, Rob. We've had actors who were presidents.
That's why he's always wearing the tie. Yes. He's trying to look presidential.
He really is. That is a power tie. It's a power tie. He's ready to win the room. I don't know. I like this. This is a good idea. This could happen. I like the idea of Jeff Varner kind of on the campaign trail. Like, we already saw how good vote Varner was. I really think that we have some possibilities here.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So President Varner. I love this idea.
America works, Rob.
Yeah.
America works.
Yeah, so President Varner, we don't know if Abby Maria is going to be getting a cabinet position at this point.
What would she be, like Secretary of like Destruction, Secretary of, I don't know, Drama? Is there a Secretary of Insanity?
Yeah, I think you would definitely want her in some sort of like, task force.
Yeah, she's leading up my task force on how to flavor vodkas.
Yeah. Listen, I'm telling you, Iran, you don't want me to send Abby Maria over there.
With me, your dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's our new foreign policy.
I'm tough on foreign policy.
That dude is going to get on my nerves.
Yeah.
That's our current foreign policy, too. Yep. This is great. I love Jeff Varner, Rob. It was way too long to see Jeff Varner again. And if for Jeff Varner alone, Survivor third time's a charm, that's got legs.
Yeah, I think so. All right. Speaking of things that have legs, here is a question that is from Eric from Portland.
Hi, Rob. My name is Eric, and I'm calling from Portland, Oregon. I just had a quick comment. Hopefully you can address this on your show. Jeff Varner's stretchy shorts leave little to the imagination and kind of shock me. wondering what your thoughts are on that. Thanks.
What just bit my ass?
Yeah. do you have thoughts on Jeff Varner's shorts?
Well, my imagination has not been active. I have noticed. I wondered if he was wearing MeUndies because Vetus was, and I didn't know if Jeff was maybe wearing some MeUndies. But Jeff's whole kind of whatever he's got going on from a fashion sense or fashion standpoint, I don't know what's happening. This guy rolls into tribal council wearing super tight like boxer briefs with like a blue sleeveless dress shirt on.
I don't. It's like risky business.
Yeah, exactly. Just take those old records off the shelf, Jeff. Like, this is ready to happen. Like, I don't know what's going on with Jeff Varner from a fashion sense, but I don't know. I wasn't really imagining what was behind the veil there. So
not a lot of people can pull off underwear and a tie.
No, that's true. It's very true. Hey,
yeah, I'm. You know, business up top, party down below.
That's right. That's right, Jeff.
He's
Jeff
the human is, he's mullet.
Like a he's like a cartoon character in the way he's dressed, and it's fantastic. And I don't know if early season confessionals were great because he was like ripping at his sleeves, trying to just rip them off while he's talking. And that's fantastic. I don't know what's going on with Jeff. I mean, is it like Major League, Rob? Are we just losing a swath of clothing each episode? Like, what's next? Is he going to just maybe rip a little bit off is it going to be a cutoff shirt? And eventually like one of the legs is going to go on the underwear and he's going to be tidy whities by the end of the day. I don't know.
Well, if Lisey is involved in a second chance, what are you saying? He's like the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, he really just bursted out. It's like the Rock Obama. Like that's what happened. Like the sleeves fell
again.
Off
President Varner.
I'm tying it right back in. This is happening.
All right, I have another theory about what's going on with Jeff Varner. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay. This is from Dave in Ohio.
Hey, Rob, this is Dave from Ohio, a.k.a. Matt Fridge on Twitter. I just realized something out of the blue. There's something familiar about Jeff Varner this season, and I couldn't put my finger on it. And then this morning I realized, purple shirt, green tie, do you realize who he is? He's the Joker from Batman, which would make Ave Maria his Harley Quinn. And so if you continue that with that mix, Savage Batman and Woo the Boy Wonder, but the point I'm getting to is that he mentioned in the interview that he had with you 3 years ago that Stupin needed to take a good goat to the end. Does Varner have this personality that thrives around Ave Maria that Stupin didn't have? Anyways, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
So isn't this an interesting connection too with these two men that were from the same Kucha tribe in Australia who both have this experience with Ave Maria? One of them gets called a moron once and an idiot twice by Ave Maria, but where Scoopin does not want to take Ave Maria to the end as a goat. Varner talks about last week, oh, wouldn't this be delicious to take Ave Maria to the end to be the goat? And so isn't that kind of crazy how these two people sort of with this history together look at the same person in very different ways?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jeff Varner should have done his research, Rob.
Yeah, wow.
That's really what it comes down to.
Everybody from the Kucha tribe needs to be doing their research. That's important.
Yeah, they got to do their research. But yeah, no, that is interesting. And it just goes to show you that when it comes to Survivor, people can have vastly different opinions of the game, even though their experiences might be very similar. And I think that Jeff's looked at his second chance, I think, a lot differently than Scoopin did, even though Scoopin was allegedly up for every season since Australia, yes. Every returning player season, he was a candidate. I'm not sure he didn't really look at it the same way that Jeff did. But on the other hand, it's really talk about what's biting Jeff in the ass. Like, this is what's biting him in the ass is counting on Ave Maria and thinking that she is a goat. Yeah. Ave Maria just bit your ass, Jeff. Like, that is what bit your ass, buddy. And like, she's not a goat. Goats are docile. They can be tamed. You can keep them, like, whatever. She's not a goat. Like, she's wild. And maybe she's a wild goat, but she's more of a battering ram or a dragon, like she likes to say. And
she's every animal.
She really is. We got to get Kim Spradlin on here, Rob, to tell us what kind of animal Ave Maria is, because she's not a goat by any stretch. She maybe is a goat in gameplay, but in terms of like how you could use her, but she's not a goat in terms of how she behaves. And so I don't think you could ever drag her to the end. And I think Scoopin's right about that one.
All right, Antonio. And that's it for the voicemails.
Oh, those are good voicemails.
Those are some good voicemails this week. But fun stuff to talk about this. By the way, Antonio, while I have you here, I don't think I did you justice in your introduction for this podcast. I called you my podcast co-host, of course, that we have podcast a number of different things together. Famously, Breaking Bad and even Better Call Saul on post-show recaps. You're also the host of the Leftovers podcast on post-show recaps. How was Leftovers this week?
It was great. It was riveting. Like, it's a different show than it was last year. Some of the same themes, but if you gave it a shot last year and couldn't stomach it, I think you can kind of jump
right chance,
back in.
You say?
Give it a second chance. Give it a second chance. And don't vote it out after three episodes. I think that's where we'd be with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, sneaky, sneaky. That's the way we go. So, yeah, we're Josh Wigler and I talk about The Leftovers. I think that's a really good podcast because both of us really find ideas from the other, and that's a show where there's a lot of room for ideas. So that works really well. We're also going to be joined by Jeremiah Panhorst to talk about Fargo. Starting this weekend, we're going to be recording a podcast.
Yeah, and so much even more going on also because you and I and Josh Wigler, of course, of Survivor Know-It-Alls fame, are also hosting another weekly TV recap on post-show recaps called Most Shows Recapped, where we're picking out one show a week and talking about that on post-show recaps. And this week, we're going to be previewing everything coming up with The Walking Dead Season 6 and talking about the finale of Fear the Walking Dead. So if you want to catch that, that is going to be up on postshowrecaps.com. That's our scripted TV podcast. And we're actually going to be recording that live on Blab if you follow us there at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. All right, are you ready to get into the Survivor social media, Antonio?
I am. I can't wait. I specifically avoided to see if Rupert tweeted or not, so we'll see.
Okay, well, I'm going to disappoint you about the Rupert front, but lots of other Survivors were tweeting last night.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Survivor tweets. They're better than taking the time to learn how to spell PG. Tweets.
That would take a long time. I feel like I only recently got it down.
I'm still not convinced that I have it down. I hate to admit it, but it's true.
Because I wasn't podcasting during China. I never had to type it out a bunch, and I didn't really have to write it correctly for the evolution of strategy because it was just my notes. And a lot of times I was just typing shorthand. I just type the initials PG. But then I feel like with doing like season previews and stuff like that, I did have to learn how to actually spell PG.
Yeah, it's just I before E except after P, I think is the way it goes. I think once you got that down, you're all right.
Of course, the great weekly Survivor Tweets jingle comes to us from Ryan Elder at Ryan Elder Music, who does a great job with that every week. Why don't we go ahead and start with Tony? Team TV was back on the prowl.
Oh my gosh. Did he hear that there was a spy shack almost involved?
Yeah. Here's what Tony had to say, and I want to get your take on this. Tony tweeted out last night, without me around, at Spencer BGM is personable instead of strategical. Wu is on the wrong side of votes. Tasha is allowed power, and Cass is human. Is Tony the reason why all of these people were the way they were in Survivor Kagyan? Like, was it really that Cass can be a nice, calm person if Tony isn't around? Is Spencer going to be somebody who can be, in Tony's words, passionate or personable instead of strategical? Tasha will be the kingpin without Tony around. Wu will end up going the wrong way all the time without Tony to tell him what to do.
I'm trying to remember. Was Tony on the Brains tribe? I didn't think so. So no, like a lot of Spencer's early game issues and a lot of Cass's early game issues and the things that were really their introductions to Survivor and to us, they were before they ever interacted with Tony, really. So, no, I mean, Tony is not the sole reason why these people were the way they were. However, Tony did, with Tony there, if Wu was by his side, I don't think Wu would be on the wrong side of votes like he is right now. Like, I do think that Tony did have an impact on all of those people in the way that he says. But ultimately, if I've heard anything about Survivor, it's that since the cameras are running so much, you can't really hide who you are out there. And I think that we're seeing a lot of the second chance theme kind of emerge for positive and negative on all these people, whether it's Wu Spencer or Cass or Tasha. I think Tasha had that great quote at the beginning of the season, like, last time I played too soft, this time I'm being a lot more strategic and I'll pray for forgiveness later or whatever. Almost like a winner quote, like that was a great deal for her. So I think she's learned. And what is it? You guys talk about this in the evolution of strategy and on Survivor Know-It-Alls and everywhere. Sometimes you take a little bit of that that winner from your season. Are you seeing any of Tony in those four at all? Or specifically Tasha, maybe?
No, not necessarily. I don't think that I'm seeing too much of that. I mean, again, I liked what Tasha had to say in the episode last night where Spencer, it seemed like he was talking about how, like, well, now I have to be a new person, a different person than I was the first time around. I have to play a different game. Where Tasha, on the other hand, said that I am strong in heart and I'm going to play the cards I'm dealt this time around. So I felt like where Tasha was coming from in her second chance was more of, I'm going to be more assertive and I'm going to sort of grow from the first experience. Spencer, I sort of feel like, is saying I'm going to be completely different than I was the first time. And I think that probably you want to be closer to the Tasha thing than the Spencer thing of, instead of being a completely different person than you were, I'm going to be more confident in my ability and what my gut is telling me based on my first experience.
Yeah, that's interesting because it wasn't necessarily to her detriment, but Tasha made that big move with another Survivor Hurricane, Jatia, and kind of backed Jatia earlier on in the game. And that was a very interesting move that was made. And certainly Jatia was unreliable. It didn't hurt Tasha's game, like I said, that all went down the way it went down, or at least seemingly it didn't hurt it. And here she is again, partnering up with Abby and staking a claim there. So in terms of lessons learned, did there need to be lessons learned about Jatia? I don't know, but here she is right back with another kind of out of control, chaotic force with Abby. And maybe her difference is that she's just a little more confident and trusting what she's doing. And she feels like she can pull this off. And here we go. She's on top of a 6-person tribe that she came in on the bottom of. So good for her.
So then a weird response to this Tony tweet. So Tony said the thing about, you know, all these Kagyan people. And Johnny Fairplay replied to Tony, and he wrote, and the show is ... watchable, as if to imply that Survivor Kagyan was an unwatchable season due to Tony. And that just seems like the craziest take I've ever heard about anything.
It is fair play. I mean, that's the man. He's a heel. You know, he's going to say the things that aren't necessarily popular. He's going to give you the takes that that generate the most obvious responses. So I don't know if he's in character there or if he truly believes it was unwatchable. But that is definitely not a take I agree with.
Yeah, I don't know what he's talking about there.
Yeah.
All right. Survivor Penner was back on the prowl last night. And so Survivor Penner... he had tweeted out a Survivor. Wow, the location's amazing. No, seriously, I still dream about the places I played, and fish should know how to cut a coconut by now. Wow. It's hard to get into stream of consciousness in a tweet.
Yeah, I was going to say two seemingly unrelated thoughts, you know, like,
I mean, three, really. It's, it's true, wow, it's true. Location's amazing. I dream about the places I played. And fish should know how to cut a coconut by now.
Do you think he means fish back, or do you think he means actual fish? Like, is he thinking that these places untouched by, you know, human evolution in some respects? Like,
maybe fish should know how to do it.
Yeah, there's actual fish that should be cutting coconuts in these crazy places that Survivor ends up.
Fish bok.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Fish bok. Fish bok. Sounds like a beer. Do you think you could sell a fish bok beer?
Fish bok.
Bok beers are very popular.
Is that an IPA?
Yeah, it's a little IPA. Well, it's a bok.
Yeah.
It's a bok. It's a fish bok.
Okay. Then also, Penner tweeted out a Survivor, tribe with nothing on beach loses. Bad draw of buffs can kill you. Tasha or Savage, bad luck can kill you.
Let me ask you about that real quick, Rob. There was some great discussion on Reddit, and I know you and Stephen Fishbok had gotten into this on one of the think tanks about the three tribe kind of format. Do you think it would have been better if they had arranged that slightly differently, like maybe had a challenge to determine who had to go to the empty beach, or done a schoolyard pick for the tribe and have kind of a bitter six left out, and had a social dynamic that would emerge there?
Yeah, almost like there should have been some penalty in terms of who got the bad beach. I like that idea.
Yeah, rather than just a kind of a bad luck of the draw thing, it was either a penalty or something like that. Like, just some way to kind of change the dynamic slightly, so that it wasn't just a bad luck thing, that it was actually, because it seems like, and I don't want to get into spoilers, but this certainly seems like a dynamic of this horrible beach scenario. With no supplies, that is going to continue to emerge.
Yeah, it seems like it's a very bad thing. You know, just to get into the precedent of this in Survivor One World, so what they had was sort of this same sort of idea where everybody lived on one, they were still two tribes, but they lived on one beach. And so what they did when they did a tribe swap in that season, then they had a challenge, and the tribe that won that reward challenge got to stay on the beach where both of those tribes had their camps. And then the new Monono tribe had to go and live on a different beach because they lost the challenge. So I do like that idea.
Well, and I think we've learned from like Survivor Fiji that the have not kind of concept, it is not necessarily, it doesn't make for dramatic tension in terms of who's going to tribal council this week or next week. It really hamstrings a certain group of people to a certain extent. And I got to feel like there's probably a better way to make those people hamstrung that isn't just bad luck of the draw.
All right. And then Penner was following along in real time on the tribal council when Abby Maria said this as to why she should be the person to stay in the tribe.
I've been working around camp, and I've been working really hard and having Encore strong. And my level of commitment is huge because I am a committal person.
Yeah. Penner tweeted, I am a committal person is gold, but the vote to me is a shocker. Damned editors.
Damned editors.
So he was blindsided. He thought Tasha was going.
Penner blindside. This is good. This
Penner
is
blindside, good. But he loved that Abby Maria is a committal person.
Because I am a committal person.
She should be committed.
That's what I expected coming out of that tweet for sure. That's what I thought when I was watching it. I thought that Penner might weigh in with that take, but that's pretty strong.
I'm non-committal about Abby Maria.
I do love one Penner. I mean, I think he's been in Cleveland, so he's been live.
He's filming a movie. Yeah.
Yeah, he's been live tweeting on my time, and I really appreciate that because I have loved his takes in the past when I've already seen the episode, and then he starts watching on West Coast time and they pop up. But I'm really enjoying seeing them on East Coast time.
Yeah. Corinne tweeted out last night. Corinne, I think she was watching the show, according to Instagram, with Max and Vetus.
I saw that.
A devil's triangle there.
Yeah, triangle's the right word. Yep.
Okay, so Corinne tweeted out that Tasha with the expletive pixelated out totally made me like her. I'm a child.
I saw that. That's a great tweet. I don't know. What did you do? You think that the Jeff Varner screaming at God, throwing middle fingers to the sky is even better?
I like that.
That's one of my favorite things that I've seen.
Very funny.
In recent seasons. That's hilarious. Yeah.
And then Corinne tweeted out, yo, either I've had too much wine or Savage is hot minus that Pacific Sunwear necklace.
Yeah, that was great. And I have a couple things to say about that. First off, if you go back and watch this episode again, which I'm sure everyone will, look at Jeff and Savage are dressed almost exactly the same. They have a blue shirt. They both have a very similar necklace on. There's one point where they cut to a close-up of Jeff, and then they, or I'm sorry, of Savage, and they cut to a close-up of Probst right after. And it's like, is it the same person? Like, what's going on here? Are they dressing alike on purpose? So I thought that was really funny. And then second, did you see Sierra's response to Corinne's tweet?
Of course. That Sierra responded to Corinne's text of, yo, either I had too much wine or Savage is hot. Sierra said, too much wine.
Too much wine. That's it. pretty simple statement. And I think I favorited that. I agree.
So yeah, Andrew Savage.
He's perfect.
Yeah. Corinne's not worried about Joe.
Nope.
All right. So then Corinne was tweeting about at Stephen Fishback at war with the coconut. I'm period. So period. Uncomfortable period. He does CrossFit, all caps.
It's true. Stephen is not getting his due. And as I said earlier, that if you watch him in the challenges, he's taking care of business, but He does not do well with a machete. And I don't blame the guy. I think part of it is Steven is smarter than he is angry. And so he knows if you take the wrong chop with that machete, you lose a hand. And I don't think he wants any part of that. I don't think he wants the Steven Skywalker edit.
The Corinne and Max and Vetus party, I think they were really fixated on this CrossFit thing. Because then Max also tweeted,
this
there's
was harsh.
A CrossFit gym in Brooklyn that lost its certification tonight. Hashtag Survivor.
Yeah, that was harsh. That was harsh. It was funny, but it was harsh. And I think they're called boxes, not gyms, Matt.
Yeah. And I think it's rather easy to get a CrossFit certification. I think it
is. Is that true? Oh, I don't know.
I watched a 60-minute piece on it.
And now you're certified?
No, I think it's a I'm committal on it.
Got it. You're committal.
Because I am a committal person.
I'm CrossFit committal at this point. Because, I think it's, from what I understand, it seemed like they had the creator of CrossFit on, and it seemed like anybody with like $2,000 and like takes like a one-day test or like a one-day thing can get a CrossFit gym.
All right. Well, maybe I'll go for that. I don't think I would be a very very good salesman of their services, but maybe I'll go for that. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Sophie weighed in on this to Corinne and said he does the other kind of CrossFit. What is the other kind of CrossFit?
That's a good question.
Is that like
pork, I don't
know. The other white meat?
Yeah. The other kind of CrossFit. What would that be? Is it like is it like a word puzzle? I don't understand.
I'm not sure.
Or is he just like constantly crucifying himself? Like, you know, just like constantly, you know, putting himself in a bad situation or something, like he's fitting himself for a cross. I don't know.
I don't know. That's an unideal situation.
Very unideal.
Also, then Spencer Bledsoe, he had tweeted, at first he tweeted about how that I love my girlfriend to the moon and back.
Thank God that came in. Did he tell her though, or did he just tweet it? He needs to tell her. Twitter doesn't count, man.
Yeah, he loves her to the moon and back. Wow, that's a very like Khal Drogo type of sentiment.
You're like a Ralph Cramden, even like, you know. I think that you got to be careful with that.
And then he deleted that tweet, but then he came back and said, "My girlfriend Marcella now hears I love you from me as much as she can stomach." So that was even a better romantic one.
Yeah, very romantic, that one. Very romantic.
Yeah, because, look at, so there you go.
Like Spencer has zero chance of winning this game.
I don't know what game Jeff is talking about.
The game of love. Yes, many moves. I liked how Jeremy said, yeah, you're not supposed to say it back. What? Come on, Jeremy. Like, yeah. From the guy who talks about how much he loves Val nonstop, he tells Spencer he's not supposed to say it back.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. It's true. It's definitely, it's a tricky thing. It's a tricky
it
thing.
Is a tricky thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Especially for Mr. Robot.
And then Cass tweeted out, who the hell is that? Said Mr. Cass during Purple Monica Padilla 7's confessional.
Oh, that's rough. Yeah. That's rough. I love Monica. I mean, her confessional, I appreciate that she got one. It was basically just like, yeah, we have four and the other two are here and they're two. So that's fine. Like, I wish we were getting a little bit more perspective of where she felt like she was within the context of that alliance, because as we were talking about earlier in these six person tribes, if you're going to try to make a move, you want to make a move with the people who are feel like they're on the outs. And does she feel like she's at the head of it? She certainly, I don't think she could. So if she feels like she's near the bottom, and I'd like to know that so that I could see if people are trying to play that.
Couple other non-survivor tweets. Dalton Ross said, only Spencer would try to prove he has feelings with a story about refusing to tell his girlfriend that he loves her.
Oh, that is a snap.
Yeah, that is a perfect Spencer story.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I mean, do you think he tells his chess pieces that he loves them?
I think so. That's how they don't leave you.
Yeah, I love you, Rook.
Yeah. Also, one of the other things that I didn't get the chance to play the clip from. This was when Sierra found out about the three tribes. Though this was good.
Shut the front door.
That was also what she said when she heard Corinne thought Andrew Savage was hot.
Shut the front door.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the whoa in the background. Whoa. Was that Steven?
Yeah. Well, that's you know she has kids because that's like a parent yeah, cursing.
I was
going
to.
Shut the front door.
And the people got to be careful. You got to be careful about the back door. You can't just shut the front door.
Yeah. Be very careful. I got to watch that. Okay. Yep. Also, then this is from a Haymaker Hattie, our own Jessica Lee. She tweeted, they just showed Joe choking a chicken. Racy choice for the 8 o'clock hour.
Haymaker Hattie is a must follow for Survivor.
Snap.
Yeah.
Tweets. Yeah. That's fantastic.
And then our own Josh Wiggler, our good friend Round Howard, he had tweeted, it looks like Varner was mouthing Monica, no? I mean, somebody's got to mention her, right?
Oh. Yeah, good job, Josh. I love that. I favorited that one. And he definitely was mouthing Monica. Like, he had an idea there. And it's interesting just to think about, like, where that's coming from. But somebody has to mention her. She got her confessional last night.
Now, I thought that Jeff Varner was saying, keep Monica. I went back and I wound it back like, three or four, or I on my DVR, I kept hitting like go back 8 second button over and over and over again. And I thought that that's what he was saying was keep Monica.
Yeah, he might. He probably said keep Monica. He might have said Kimmy and Monica. I don't know exactly what that first word was, but it's definitely Monica. So he's got Monica on the mind.
Yeah, it seemed like that he was trying to say if they go to tribal council, they should keep Monica around, maybe that she was another one of his pregame alliances. But it's very interesting about this whole scenario. We've talked about this a lot tonight, but our good friend Shut Up Tim has captured the Jeff Varner Matt saga with another one of his wonderful songs. You ready?
I can't wait. Yes, I'm very ready.
Tasha shouted R-A-T to the world. Tasha shouted R-A-T to the world. I hope that Wiggles gets that. I hope that Wiggles gets that. I hope that Wiggles gets that message from Varner. Message from Varner.
You feeling that one?
I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. I give that 1.5 year buds.
Okay, fair enough.
It's not my favorite source material. I like some of the past ones better, but that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Okay. Of course, that comes from the great at Shut Up Tim, one of the hosts of the Tribe podcast. You can hear him on there. He says he's going to send me one song a week until his wife has a baby. So at any point, we're on the precipice of losing those songs that everybody loves.
Do you think Vetus was trying to give a massage in a bottle? I think that was the problem for Vetus.
How does that work?
You have to see it to believe it, my friend.
Okay. It's like, how did that get in there? How did they do that? Antonio, was there anything else that we needed to cover in this episode?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the way the tribes have shaken out now, I am interested to see exactly if we go back together at 14 or if we go back together at 16, and you seem to think it's going to be 14 and we're going to get several vote outs here before we, so four more. If we do 16, I feel like the Takeo tribe is in better shape, the former Takeo tribe. But if we go down to 14, it's going to be brutal. And I think you're probably right that we have that. Do we have any inappropriate Jeff Probst this week?
No, he was pretty above board this week.
He said something at some point about, like, you have to get your chest out before you can do the puzzle. And I was like, what the hell is he talking about? And then I realized he was talking about the chests that they were carrying.
Yeah,
in,
no, I definitely was keyed in on the first half of that. But then I felt like, okay, well, that was sort of forcing it.
Yeah, I didn't know what was going
on.
And,
you know, the thing about that with, you know, if you have to force it.
If you try to force it and it doesn't fit, probably doesn't belong there.
And that also applies to Jeff's inappropriate comments.
Fair play. I'm in on that.
Yeah. Now that's the guy that hates Tony.
That's right. I forgot. Unwatchable. Tony's unwatchable, which is of all the words.
What a terrible take.
Last I would use. Yeah. It's
the dumbest thing I ever heard.
Is Team TV, for crying out loud. The TV is right there in the name.
That's terrible. All right. So, Antonio, great job on the voicemails this week. Fun podcast. I feel like there's only one way to go with the hashtag, and that has to be hashtag President Varner.
Hail to the chief, baby.
Yes. That's great. I love that idea.
That dude is going to get on my nerves.
No, he's great. He would be a great president.
Yes, we'll be fantastic.
Vote for him. He's heading to Iowa after this for the Iowa caucus.
I'm open to ideas on who the running mate should be. I would love to know.
What survivor should be President Varner's running mate? Terry exactly. Dietz?
Terry Dietz would be great. That would be a great running mate. I think that he needs to look beyond his tribe and really consider the board is wide open here. So maybe Rupert's already got the political experience. I don't know.
Now, is Terry Dietz, is that sort of like on this ticket of Varner, President Varner's ticket? Like, does he want another old school guy on it?
That's what I mean. You got to look beyond kind of, I think, your original take, and you really got to consider everybody that's in play, because you can't necessarily, sometimes you want to balance out your ticket. It was really weird when Bill Clinton took Al Gore because they were both Southern white men. Sometimes you want to balance out your ticket. So,
yeah,
you know, you go with like Barack Obama and doesn't have any experience. So he picks Joe Biden, who has a lot of experience and so forth and so on.
So you want sort of like a young, high, like ideally, like you want like a Joe on there, or maybe like one of these, like, we can get Tasha on the ticket with Jeff Varner. I think they're on the opposite side of the game right now. But if they can really get, I think that would be a good person to have there with him.
Yeah, that would be strong. Tasha would be strong. She'd get the faith vote out for him. That would be really good.
Yes.
Once the Saints are on your side, Rob, you're all right.
Yeah, I think that would be perfect. Okay.
Yeah. So let us know your ideas. I'd love to know people's ideas.
Let us know in the comments. We should run with President Varner. That's great. All right. So then, Antonio, then that's it for this show. We're going to be back with talking with Jessica Leese for the Amazing Race wrap up. That's going to be on Friday night. Of course, Antonio and I and Josh will be together on Friday afternoon on our most shows recapped as well. And of course, you can hear Antonio on a bunch of other podcasts on post show recaps. I think this weekend also we're going to get back into doing a Saturday morning or early afternoon if you're on the East Coast show that I tried out a couple of weeks ago with my good buddy Jordan Parhar that we called This Week in RHAP, where it's we're going to be on Blab talking to you guys and hearing what you guys have to say about the week of podcasts. I did a week of podcasts, and now it's your turn to talk back to me. We're going to do that on Blab for about an hour or so on Saturday afternoon. So keep your eyes peeled for that. So, Antonio, I think that's about it.
Thank you very much, Rob. This was fun, and I can't wait to talk to you tomorrow on Most Shows Recap.
Okay. Next week on the show, I got a scoop for you. You ready for who's coming back?
I can't wait. This is great.
Okay, I'll give you some hints. I'll give you a little bit of a tease.
All right.
This person has never done an episode recap with me.
Okay.
Right. Do you know who it is?
Is it Bryce Isaiah?
No. This person has never done an episode recap with me, but has made several appearances on the podcast.
Okay. Is it Deb?
It is not Deb Eaton. This person is a two-time Survivor player.
All right. Let's see. Two-time Survivor player. No, I got nothing.
This person has not appeared on the podcast since December of 2013.
Wow. Okay. So two-time Survivor, only has done guest appearances, has never done the full recap.
This person has played with a person who mocks Stephen Fishback for going to CrossFit.
Oh, so this person has played with Corinne? On the first season or this? Just I can't. I'm not going to guess it, Rob.
Okay. Randy Bailey will join me for the recap next week.
I can't believe Randy's never... He's been on reality wrap-ups talking about The Bachelorette.
He's on it every season. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's never done... He's never... I don't know. Are we ready for this? Can we have a fan call in and talk to Randy?
Sure. Randy is ending his own self-imposed exile from talking about that island show here on Rob as a podcast to do his first ever episode recap next week on the podcast. So that's going to be huge. Very exciting.
He's got to have some hot takes if he's wanting to do that. If he's willing to do that, he's got to have some hot takes he's coming in with. I can't wait for this.
And on top of that, also, I believe in next week on the voicemail, I got a solid yes for somebody that I've been trying to get on the voicemails for quite some time. Person who's an unbelievably tough guest to get. Nicole Cesternino is scheduled to do the voicemails with me. She could cancel that. Now, this is my flakiest guess. She could cancel on me at any point. She'll think nothing of it.
Well, I understand. But anytime you can get the flop, that's a huge get. You got Randy and the flop.
I want to get one more from her before baby number two comes.
I like that.
I feel like really we're not going to hear from her for a while.
Rob, she could go into labor on the air while you're recording.
Oh man, those Snapchats will be great. I've already been telling her about I think this is going to be really great for my Snapchat when the next baby comes.
That's a good focus for your second child.
This is really going to help my numbers on Snapchat. I think people are really going to be into this. I'm going to Snapchat the whole delivery.
This is no good. This is no good. I don't like the way this is going.
I told her, don't worry, nothing like below the equator. That's fine. I'll just keep you all above board.
Yeah, I'm not, is she kosher with anything? Is she open to the snap from the delivery room? Is this going to happen, Rob? Are you kidding?
Oh, snap.
Yeah, that's what she's going to be saying.
It'll be great to have Nicole on to do the voicemails. I think that I for one want to know what Nicole has to say about the season, because I really enjoy the preseason podcasts, and it's always nice to have kind of a revisit of those, because as you kind of, especially in a season like this where you already have info on the players, it'll be interesting to see where she's at in the middle of this kind of madness that we've been in. I want to hear what Nicole has to say about Abby Maria.
Yeah, and she will be back to rehash everything she got right and not want to discuss anything that she got wrong from the preview.
I can't say I blame her on that one.
She'll be talking about don't you remember when I said that PG was going to be the third person voted out, and then do you remember when I said that Abby Maria was going to be this, and blah 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 blah.
Everyone tweet at Nicole what her good hot takes were from that preview, so she doesn't have to remember.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So trying to rehash all of them. All right. Yeah. Very, very good stuff. I also want to thank everybody. We've had a lot of people come on to our patron program since our last live show. We greatly appreciate that. If you want to find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron, you can go to robasawebsite.com/patron. I had such a fun time with everybody in New York. But if that is not right for you, the biggest thing you could do to help us out with the podcast, if you know somebody else who's a Survivor fan in your life and you think that they might like it, or if you're trying to get somebody maybe a little more into Survivor, it's a bit of a gateway podcast, I like to think, with Robin's podcast, in the most innocuous way possible, and you want to check that out, go ahead and let your friends know, if you have a friend, because I God knows I don't.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you don't have a friend, this might be a good way to make one. I've seen, even in the patron group, people talking about how they're connecting with each other on social media, on dating applications. Are you a patron? Are you a fan of Rob as a podcast? It's happening, Rob. It's all happening. Yeah. You're building a nation.
So that's the biggest thing you could do to help us out. If you know somebody that's a Survivor fan and they don't know anything about this podcast and you think they might like it, go ahead and let them know about what we're doing over here on Rob as a podcast. Antonio, great job. Follow Antonio on Twitter. He's at AC Mazzaro. That's 2 Z's, 1 R.
You got it.
All right. Have a good one, everybody. And we'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye.
Tasha shouted, R-A-T to the world. Tasha shouted, R-A-T to the world. I hope that Wiggles gets that. I hope that Wiggles gets that. I hope that Wiggles gets that message from Varner. Message from Varner.
that message from Varner. Poorly whispered message from Varner.